is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to One Bills Drive on this Tuesday afternoon. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy alongside Donald Jones. We're back after Easter Monday off. Happy Easter, Donald. Hope you had a good holiday weekend, right?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good to get back home and get some food. My grandmother's cooking and 86 and sunny back in New Jersey, so you can't complain with that.
Yeah, good weather here in Western New York. Our thanks to Sal Capaccio, who filled in on the show for us yesterday, allowing us to enjoy the Easter holiday weekend. But we're back at work here at One Bills Drive. We're here for the next 3 hours to talk about the Bills and the NFL, and we'd love to hear from you. Speaking of back at work, the players are back at work today. They had the long holiday weekend off, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
A little bit longer than us.
A little bit longer, one day longer than us. But players are back. Looks like just passing through the field house. It looked like a pretty well-attended first day of the voluntary veteran minicamp. It is a three-day minicamp that starts today. And we're talking about the schedule. I mean, this is a long day. Started at, in the weight room anyway, at 7 a.m., and then meetings all day in the morning. And then a walkthrough in mid-morning, and then a half hour off, and then practice on the field. They're out there right now for about 2 hours and 15 minutes, and then they lift, and then lunch, and then meetings. I mean, basically, you're talking about 7:30 till 5:30 p.m., 7:30 in the morning till 5:30 p.m. for the next 3 days. These are long, and I'm sure they hope very productive days for this football team this week, Donald.
Man, that is a long day for minicamps. So I guess there's no rules once you get to minicamps.
No, there's rules.
How long you can have the players in the building.
Yeah, there's rules. Yeah.
Well, but still, that seems like a long day. I mean, it does really seem like the only rules, it just seems like you can't hit on the field.
Right. Well, do you want to talk about rules? I actually did a piece that's up on BuffaloBills.com about this. No, but here's what you can and can't do.
Good plug right there.
This is a phase two of the off-season conditioning program. And same rules as before. There is no contact, obviously, permitted. Contact work permitted in all not permitted in all workouts. No blocking, no tackling, no pass rushing, no bump and run. The guidelines, rules promulgated by the league and the NFLPA, they say the intensity and tempo of drills should be at a level conducive to learning, with players' safety at the highest priority. Interpret that any way you want. The workouts are strictly voluntary. And in phase two, coaches are – here's the big difference from last couple of weeks. Coaches are allowed on the field right now. Individual drills are allowed, but no offense, no defense – versus defense, rather. No one-on-one drills, offense, defense, no helmets. So coaches are allowed on the field, which, you know, we talked with Logan Thomas about this when he was on the show with us last week. I would think that would make a kind of a difference in the way these – last week it was all just conditioning work. This week they're running around with footballs and doing football-type things anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure the coaches couldn't wait for this week, you know, because it's one thing for the guys to get back into the building and you can meet with the guys, but you can't get on the field with them, you know. And you see the quarterbacks out on the field throwing with the wide receivers, throwing with the running backs, guys out on the field working out, but they have to do it by themselves. So I'm sure that the coaches were anxious to get out here and be able to get on the field and start to really teach these guys everything about the playbook and moving forward.
And, you know, again, I wrote this piece. It's up at BuffaloBills.com about six key changes about this week and maybe six things to look for this week as the Bills get set into this next phase of off-season conditioning. It's up on the website right now if you care to take a look. Six things to watch for this week as the veterans hit the field for veteran minicamp. And we talk about that, about the coaches' eagerness. In fact, last week Sean McDermott did an interview on the radio here in Buffalo on our flagship WGR and talked about how he was so eager to get out there. He took his coaching staff out onto the field inside the stadium the other day, and they sort of practice. Here's what our practice will look like. Just coaches. They kind of went through what the practice will look like, where you're going to run your drills, where you're going to run these drills. They practice, which is kind of an attention to detail that you don't see very often.
You definitely don't see that very often. But, you know, these guys really do have to get used to how he wants things to be run in practice. And I'm sure, you know, Coach McDermott, first-time head coach, you don't want to get out to practice and everything just falls by the wayside and everything is just running crazy. Guys are running around with their heads cut off. You want everything to go smooth. And so just like the players need to learn how he's going to practice, the coaches need to understand how he wants to get things done as well so that it can all trickle down to the players. Because ultimately the position coaches are the ones that relay those messages to the players in those meetings, you know. So he goes out there, he has this type of walkthrough thing with the coaches so that, listen, this is how I want it done. You can go back and tell your players in your position, your room, this is how things are going to be done. This week, though, the players are really going to have to get a feel for what's going to happen in practice, how practice is going to be ran every day here in minicamps.
And it's going on right now on the other side of the wall over there in the AdPro Sports Training Center. We're in the front end where the old Bill store used to be in our One Buffalo studio. And the players, the veteran voluntary minicamp, is going on the other side of the wall. So we'll keep you posted on any news coming from the week. We don't get a chance to talk with Coach McDermott or hear any news conferences until the end of this week, Thursday. Today is day one of the three-day voluntary veteran minicamp going on right here. All right, on the show today, we're going to cover a lot of territory. Andrew Brandt is going to join us in just a couple of minutes at the bottom of the hour. He is the business reporter, the NFL business reporter for ESPN. He also works for Peter King's MMQB website. He's going to talk about how the NFL draft gets covered and consumed, the NFL, basically how media pays attention to the draft and how people are getting their NFL news, among other business issues. Andrew Brandt will join us at 12:30 today on the show. The great Steve Tasker in studio with us, his regular Tuesday visit. He'll come in and talk about a variety of topics. We'll get Steve's take on these voluntary minicamps and anything else going on around the NFL. Agent Joel Corey joins us at 2 o'clock this afternoon. He's been a frequent guest on the show. He writes for CBSSports.com. He's going to talk about first-round quarterbacks. Recent history, according to Joel Corey, says first-round quarterbacks are more likely to fail, which I don't think would surprise many people. You know, I mean, we've seen it here. We've seen. I've saw the latest. I don't know if Joel dives into the numbers like this, but I've seen stats that say more than 50% of quarterbacks chosen in the first round don't really pan out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me because usually we're talking about quarterbacks going in the top 10. You know, if you're going in the first round, it's usually to a team that needs a quarterback, and that's usually in the top 10, top 15 of the draft, which means that you're going to come in and you're probably going to be starting right away. The team is not that good. They probably don't have too many weapons around you, too many things for you to, you know, too many different weapons that you can work with. And so because of that, you don't get a chance to really develop into being a good quarterback in this league. The quarterbacks that have a chance to sit behind somebody else for a couple of years, they really learn how to play quarterback in this league. And then once they get their shot, they still might have a couple of growing pains, but they have weapons around them. It's usually a better team. And so they step into a better situation, and they end up playing well.
So Joel Corey has written about that. We'll talk about that. First-round quarterback washouts, he's coming up with us at 2 o'clock today. And we hope to hear from cornerback Leonard Johnson, one of the veterans signed to the Buffalo Bills roster. Leonard Johnson is here with the Bills today. And, you know, we'll see. He's a brand-new cornerback. If he can get off the field and get in here in time in that busy schedule we talked about, we'll try to get Leonard Johnson in here in the studio with us. Again, so many new faces that, you know, we're still trying to get to learn here, Donald, right? I mean, a lot of these guys we don't quite know yet.
Yeah, I mean, you see them walking around, and they're looking at us. I'm looking at them like, what's up, man? How you doing? And they're like, what's up, man? Trying to figure out who I am and what they can say to me. It's the same with the coaches. You know, you get to talk to the coaches sometimes in passing, and they're like, what's your name again? Who do you work for? Like, what do you do here? And when I say, you know, oh, yeah, we do some media here, they're like, oh, well, let me watch what I say to you, you know. So you got to get used to each other. It takes time, and these players, we just don't know them. We haven't really had a chance to talk to all of them.
Hopefully we get a chance to meet and talk with Leonard Johnson coming up on the show later today. So that's it, busy schedule. We'll start by engaging you. I want to hear from you, your thoughts after the holiday weekend about the Bills and the NFL. And anything's on the table. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Here's a tweet that gets my attention right off the bat. Silas Greenback, so will report. He put so, O-O-O-O, which.
Okay.
What does that mean? What's the connotation there?
It's just like, so what are you saying?
Will reporters be allowed to practice this year? Just as they were last year, I anticipate. I don't think the rules will change. Didn't really change last year. talk about a tempest in the teapot. You weren't here for that.
No, I wasn't.
Right around this time last year, there were new rules promulgated about how much practice could be watched by the media. And it didn't really – it wasn't much of a difference from the year before, but it became a – you know,
became a thing.
Yeah, it became a thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of things that are becoming things.
Reporters are allowed Thursday to go out and watch some of the stretch and the initial stages, I believe, this week.
What is it, 15 minutes?
Yeah, something like that. Not a change from years past either.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been like that. For the media, they get one day a week.
Yeah.
And they come in and you watch for 15 minutes. Usually that's the individual session, you know, when the wide receivers are just working out with the wide receiver coach.
Right.
You might get to see a tippet of like quarterbacks throwing to the wide receivers, but you don't get to see anything other than that. I mean,
no. And it's not much. It's no different than most other teams either.
No, it's most. Is teams. That a? So is that an NFL rule? Is that just every team is
every
different?
Team can, well, there are guidelines. You have to allow some viewing portions for media, mm-hmm. but most teams adhere to those guidelines. Some are a little bit stricter. Some are less strict. So
where would you think
deal.
We fall?
Right in the middle, right I the thought, middle. The last couple of years. Okay. Here's what we want to talk about. One of the things we want to talk about is it's our Twitter poll. We're kind of getting a sense for the roster, who's on the roster, who's not. I did the numbers yesterday. I think there are 71 players on the roster right now. So draft picks to come, rookie free agents still to come, obviously. But our question for you today on Twitter, who is a dark horse candidate to have a breakout season for the Buffalo Bills? Who is somebody you might not think about but could have a breakout season? And there are a lot of candidates. We went through it in the room getting ready for it. We narrowed it down to three for purposes of the Twitter poll, but you may have something else. Who is a dark horse candidate to have a breakout season with the Bills? So far, just over 100 votes in with the poll just going up. And right now, 36% say wide receiver Andre Holmes is a dark horse candidate for a breakout season, someone you may not have thought of yet. 31% say cornerback Kevon Seymour going into his second year. 19% say a draft pick, an unnamed 2017 draft pick, will have a breakout season for the Bills. That would be great. 14% say somebody else. Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Dark horse candidate to have a breakout season. There are a lot of candidates, Donald. Some of them mentioned on our Twitter poll. Obviously, you know, Andre Holmes gets a lot of attention because people are looking for that second wide receiver, that complement to Sammy Watkins. There is a hole there on the roster, and a lot of people have settled on Andre Holmes. I'm not convinced that he's going to have a breakout season. We'll see. What do you think?
Yeah, we'll have to see about him. For me, I go – if we're talking about the Twitter poll, I'd go more with Kevon Seymour just because, you know, obviously Andre Holmes is in the same situation where all we talk about is we need another receiver. We need a number two receiver. Mm-hmm. So he hears that. He understands that. He's going to come to camp, and he's going to come to practice, work hard every day, and try to earn that spot. I think Kevon Seymour showed a lot of promise last year, and I think that, you know, he's smart enough to be able to transition into playing in his zone defense. He's athletic enough to get it done. And so, you know, I look forward to seeing Kevon Seymour this season. I think he's the one that will have a breakout season.
Some people think it'll be Andre Holmes coming over from the Raiders on the Twitter poll. That's the leading candidate right now. There are others, though, and we'd like to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Who's under the radar? Who do you think will have a breakout season for the Bills? Ben Chu tweets in a name that would be the one I would choose, and it's not one of our choices. He goes, what about Reggie Ragland? That's who I would choose as the dark horse candidate, a guy that we haven't even seen on an NFL field yet, but I think he's going to have a breakout, a big splash, essentially rookie season for the Buffalo Bills. I think they have a role for him to play. I think he's going to be – I'm anticipating he'll be healthy enough to play. I think Reggie Ragland is a guy who many people may not even, you know, think too much about him as far as having an impact on the roster, but I think he's going to have a breakout season. A couple of other tweets on this. Josh Pinnell tweets in, my dark horse is Colby Listenbe. Again, a chance to make him. Why does the mere mention of Colby Listenbe's name make you laugh?
I mean, we just hear that name so much here. Like, everybody wants to see Colby Listenbe be the number two receiver. I guess it's because of the speed. What did he run at the combine? He must have blazed at the combine.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to see him step up, emerge as that number two receiver. We had him on the set, and he said, you know, he feels like he can be that. You know, we just have to see with that injury if he can be the same receiver he was coming out of college, if he can run the same, if he's still as fast. And even if he's not as fast as he ran his 40, him not being as fast is probably still faster than a lot of guys in this league, right? So if he can emerge as a good receiver, I hope so, because we really do need a number two receiver. And I, like I said before, I don't trust, even though he's still going to be a rookie, I don't trust rookies coming in right out of college and saying this guy is the number two receiver.
I agree. That, to me, is a bit of a longer shot, but I know that a lot of people like him. 4.39 was his time at the combine.
Yeah.
Pretty fast.
Pretty fast. I'll tell you another name who I think can really emerge, and I think he's going to get a lot of playing time. He's going to really be in the rotation this year because of Kyle's age. I think Adolphus has a shot at really emerging in this defense, because you're going to have a heavy rotation. Kyle is up there in age, and so they're going to have to keep rotating these guys in and out. I think he has a chance to really emerge as a good player.
When we talked about it in pre-show today, we talked some of the people we were talking to that we work with here mentioned that maybe Shaq Lawson would have a breakout year. I think Shaq Lawson had a pretty good final 10 games of the season. He got up to speed as it went along and had a couple of good moments. Did he break out? No. But would it surprise me if he kind of picked up where he left off? No, that wouldn't surprise me. I think he's a pretty good player.
He's a pretty good player, and he's a first-round draft pick. You know? So when you talk dark horse, you're talking about a guy who you don't really hear that much, a guy who, when you think a guy who's going to have a breakout season, his name might come up first in your mind, you know, on this team. So you're talking about a guy whose name won't really come up. You have to actually go to the roster, look at the roster, and say, oh, maybe this guy can have a good season. Mm-hmm. You think about the big picture. So, for me, when I look at it, I think, you know, a guy like Adolphus can be that guy.
Who do you think? Who's a dark horse candidate to have an impact on the Bills season this year, to be a breakout player? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of other tweets. Bob Timchak says, I like what I saw of Kevon Seymour last year. Might be crazy, but I thought he was as good as Gilmore most of the time. He goes on to say Gilmore gave up on us. I don't know that he was as good as Gilmore, but I think Kevon had good moments.
He did. He had good moments. I think one of his best moments, and people would say, well, he got toasted in the Oakland game. The Oakland game, he showed that even though he got burned on one play, he could guard those two receivers, which are two of the better receivers in this game, one-on-one. You know, so for me, that showed a lot of promise in a young cornerback, a rookie cornerback. I think that was like his first start, right, his first true start outside. He showed a lot of promise in that game to me. And I think, you know, coming into this season, he wants to prove that he is a starting cornerback. And he wants to prove that he's the number one starting cornerback, especially when everybody's saying we need to draft a cornerback at the 10th pick. I think he wants to come in here and really show, listen, I'm that dude. Ronald Darby, I respect you, but I am that dude, you know, and I want to be the number one cornerback on this team. And so I think he's going to come in here and really show.
A couple of other suggestions for this topic. Dark horse candidate for a breakout season for the Bills. Ryan Ernest tweets in, Holmes, Andre Holmes, no doubt. Well, I think there's some doubt about that. We'll see. Yeah. Dane Johnson tweets in, how about Charles Clay? He goes on to say, I think he is past due for a breakout season with the skill set he possesses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can make that point, I guess. I think Clay is dependent, as would Holmes be, or any of them, dependent on the quarterback getting him the ball. Yeah. I do think Clay has a good skill set. You know, what we talked to him the other day, 50-some catches each of his first 2 years with the Bills. Yeah, he can do more than that. He should be able to do more than that. But it almost is a function of the offense, I think.
Yeah, you know, it just depends on how they're getting him the ball.
Is the offense balanced? Is there more of a passing emphasis? That will help Charles Clay have a breakout season. I don't think that's in his own hands.
I don't expect it to be more. It might be a little bit more of a balance, but this is going to still be a run-first offense, I believe. And, you know, they're going to use that run to create things in the passing game. But I think it's still going to be more of a run-heavy offense. Charles Clay, I just hope that they use him a little bit. Like, he could still have 50 catches. Make it just different types of catches and not just stop routes. You know, let him catch the ball on the move. If you do that, then it's going to seem like, man, this dude is having a crazy season. He'll have the same amount of catches with just different numbers as far as touchdowns and yardage goes, just because he's catching the ball in a different place on the field. A
couple of other suggestions. Xavier Balsano tweets in, how about Preston Brown? He goes on to say, most underrated Mike linebacker in the game. Hopefully he'll get some recognition this year. I don't know. I like Preston Brown's game. I never considered him underrated. And it's tough to be overrated. It's tough to get recognition is what I'm trying to say when you're playing on a defense that struggled the way the Bills have. 19th the defense in the NFL last year.
It's definitely tough to get any shine. But then we had some guys that really got some shine last year and ended up in the Pro Bowl on that defense. regardless if they were, you know, alternates or not, they still ended up in the Pro Bowl. Preston, I think in this defense, if he's the Mike linebacker in this defense, he might have an opportunity to make a lot more plays than he did last year. I feel like last year he took on a lot of the dirty work, and Zach was the one that had all of the cleanup and made all of the tackles, you know. So I hope that this year Preston is that guy, you know, for his sake. I hope that he can emerge as one of the best middle linebackers in the game.
A couple of other names suggested by Twitter as guys who are going to be breakout players for the Bills. Chet Spoonley suggests Reggie Ragland. Dr. Marini suggests Jack Lawson. Josh Shoup says Logan Thomas, our guest on the show last week. Hmm. Nick Lettieri says Ramon Humber, if the spot is not filled. Good, fast, special teamer who could break out like Zoe. I don't see that. I don't see that happening. Vinny Piscopio, Reggie Ragland, does he qualify to earn Rookie of the Year since he was hurt before week one? Good question. I don't know. Michael Harbor, Clay, if they throw it to him. Frank Alicious, Jonathan Williams, I think the Bills won't match with New England for Gillislee. Williams is the next man up. New England has not offered Gillislee a contract yet.
Right.
Friday, the deadline for that, so it remains to be seen.
It remains to be seen. You know, I look at another guy, and I brought this up. We keep talking about the cornerback position, they need to draft one. The safety position, they need to draft one. So I even look at Jordan Poyer as being a possible guy that can break out because, you know, he comes over from Cleveland. He has a great opportunity to start on this defense and be the free safety in this defense. And if he can do that, he can have a breakout season. Him and Micah Hyde back there can really get things done. Let him roam the field back there. And it's a great opportunity for him not just to play special teams but become a true starter and have a breakout season.
Jason Persons tweets in Jordan Poyer, so agrees with you, Donald, a guy to watch. Give us your thoughts. Phone us up, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Potential breakout players, under-the-radar players for the Bills as they move into the voluntary veteran minicamp this week. Give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We mentioned Gillislee a moment ago. Teams have until April 21st, this Friday, right? Yeah, Friday, to, sign him to an offer sheet. And the Bills have not they've tendered him. He hasn't signed his offer sheet here. New England had him in for a visit. No offer sheet reportedly coming out of there yet. So this will be settled, you would think, in the next few days here. The Bills have the original draft pick tender on him, so they get a fifth-rounder in return if Gillislee were to sign somewhere else and if Buffalo didn't want to match it. I think the Bills are in good position here, Donald. They've preserved their rights to get some compensation if he gets away. Mm-hmm. They have him under the type of contract that they believe they can afford. And we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Any thoughts on how this might play out this week?
We haven't received an offer yet from the Patriots. You know, they can make an offer this week. Like you said, they have until Friday. For me, if he gets out of here, I like Mike Gillislee. I think he's a very good backup running back to LeSean McCoy. He scores a lot of touchdowns. Obviously, he runs hard. He's fast. He can break out. If LeSean McCoy goes down, I think he can be the guy that can, you know, carry the load for you. But if he gets out of town and you get a fifth-round pick for him, like, I have no problem with that because this is a deep running back draft, and I think you can find another guy that can get it done as a backup.
And I think we talked about this last week when the reports came out that Gillislee visited New England. It looks like New England is just kind of squeezing LeGarrette Blount, right? They don't want to pay him what he wants. They've had a dalliance with Adrian Peterson, right? Mm-hmm. He came in for a visit. Marshawn Lynch had been rumored
about
to
that.
And now Gillislee, another one, it appears, in an effort to squeeze LeGarrette Blount. And you know what? New England's probably thinking, hey, we're going to get LeGarrette Blount at our price, or we'll get one of these other guys, right? I mean, that's the way they operate. That's the way smart teams operate.
That's the way you should operate. We get them at our price, and if you don't want to settle for this price, I mean, they will say it to you. Do you want to win or do you not want to win? If you want to win, you sign at this price and you'll be on a winning team. If you don't want to win, then go somewhere else and make your money and you can watch us win, you know, and that's why they are who they are now. I mean, obviously they have the quarterback, but when you have that guy, when you have that coach and you've been winning so much, you can work like, you can operate like that. You know, you can afford to bring different guys in and squeeze you.
And so I think the Bills are essentially doing the same thing. They might not have the playoff carrot to offer just yet, but they're saying, look, here's the price we've established that we're willing to pay you. It is the low tender, the fifth-round tender, and we want to have you back at that number, and if it gets too crazy, we'll take our draft pick and move on to somebody else. One other thing over the last few days since we've been here, discussion out there about Sammy Watkins and the Bills have until May 2nd to decide whether to pick up Sammy Watkins' fifth-year option. That will come after the draft, right, the week or so after the draft, a couple of days after the draft. And I think they're being smart about this, Donald. Why rush into it? Sammy's got the foot injury, the foot surgery he's coming back from. They may get a chance to reevaluate that this week during the voluntary veteran minicamp and make up their mind. There's no rush to make this decision, and I think they're being smart with it.
You know, we've talked about it. Sammy Watkins, you don't want to say he's injury prone, but because of the nature.
I wouldn't say that.
Right. So
would you?
I just think the nature of his injury, having a couple of surgeries on that foot, just really not knowing if the foot will come back and he'll be able to get through a full season with that foot is why, you know, they're taking their time. The first thing we should say is they haven't rushed to do anything since they hired Coach McDermott. They have not rushed to do anything. Him and Doug together are like, listen, we're going to wait until we have to make a decision. Why would we make a decision now when we don't have to? I mean, we have other things to worry about right now. We have the draft that we need to worry about, you know. So they wait until they have to. They make that decision. I just think that because of the injury, that's another reason why they're trying to make sure that he's good.
Yeah, you know? Why commit?
Yeah.
You know, let's see how this looks this week. Maybe there's more doctors to talk to. Maybe there's Sammy to talk to. How does it feel? What do you think? You know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's no reason to rush into it. And May 2nd, it'll be here soon enough. Really.
It will. It's about a couple of weeks now. A couple of weeks, yep.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the business of the NFL with Andrew Brandt. He is ESPN's NFL business reporter. He talks about how the NFL gets covered and consumed these days. It's changing. The landscape is changing. We'll also get his thoughts on some of these business issues around the National Football League. We're just getting started from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones on this first day of the voluntary veteran minicamp for the Buffalo Bills and the other side of the building here, the AdPro Sports Training Center. We're here until 3. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who covers the business side of the NFL. He is ESPN's business analyst, columnist for the MMQB.SI.com. Happy to have Andrew Brandt on the line with us. Andrew, thanks for coming on with us again. It's John Murphy and Donald Jones. I want to talk to you about some of your recent posts, but today's the first day of the voluntary veteran minicamp. Donald and I were talking about how the league has changed and how restrictive they are with these mini camps. And I do think that's a good thing, Andrew, despite some of the squawking you get from coaches. What do you think about the way these offseason weeks are structured now in the NFL?
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. I mean, listen, I was in the NFL for a long time when the offseason was a lot different than it is now. And you mentioned the squawking. It is from the coaches. And I also covered the CBA negotiations several years ago. And listen, coaches weren't part of that negotiation. That was between the players and the owners, and it was all about getting the right deal. And one of the sacrifices the owners made willingly and happily, I guess, to get the economic deal they wanted was to give in on the off season. And, yeah, coaches are upset. But, listen, when we talk about big business, which I cover in the NFL, the coaches want for players to be around more in the offseason, that was way down the list. So coaches can complain all they want. We're only halfway through this deal, and I don't know if it's going to be a big concern when the deal comes up again in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. It's kind of like the old saying, you know, war, you don't leave war up to the generals or something, right? When you go to war on a CBA, you don't let the generals, the coaches, decide what the strategy is going to be.
Yeah, and, you know, it's no secret what the number one priority in football has been for like the past 5 years, which is health and safety. So this was an easy give, for ownership to sort of say, yeah, okay, sure. You want less time? Yeah. I mean, as long as you're there for the games, I think that was an easy give. And, you know, now players are getting back from what was really a mandatory 3-month vacation. I mean, my last point on this, maybe in the new CBA you have a bifurcated system where you have players older, 3 years are up, maybe 4 years are up. They do what they're doing now. But maybe you allow for, what, 2 more weeks for younger players, 1 more week, 3 more weeks, whatever it is.
Hmm. That would be interesting. With Andrew Brandt, ESPN business analyst. Andrew, I want to take you to a post that you put up on mmqb.si.com about your symposium at Villanova Law School, the Morad Symposium, where you talk to some leading figures both in sports journalism and journalism in general about the way NFL news is consumed. And a lot of it is social media now. Can you tell us some of the issues that you guys discussed coming out of that symposium a week or so ago?
Yeah, John, I host a big event every year at Villanova where I teach, and we're endowed by Jeffrey Morad, who owned the San Diego Padres, like me, former agent and then team executive. And we hosted this year about sort of changing roles of sports and media and economics and millennials and how people are covering sports. And it really got into sort of, like you said, Twitter, how people use social media, how people use their own brand. Peter, you know, who runs MMQB, Peter King, talked about, you know, how he was photoed with Roger Goodell eating chili 7 years ago, and that kind of haunted him, like he's in bed with Goodell. Talked to Chuck Todd, the host of Meet the Press, about how he covers the president, and really talked about the president being really in tune with all this because he can put out a tweet at 6 in the morning and occupy the morning news shows for 3 hours.
Yeah,
it was really interesting. And the last thing on Chuck Todd, he just did not want to become part of the story. So he really talks about holding himself back on these tweets because he's just got to filter it. He hates that he does, but he does.
Andrew, one of the things that I got from this article, you talked about the challenges of opinion-based journalism and how, you know, you can put your opinion out there, and if it's loud enough, you're going to get some traction. So can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was from Jack Ford, who's the host of 60 Minutes. He's been on the Today Show, and what he really talked about was, like you said, you know, people yell and scream and get on the air, and what about facts? He's worried about facts, and he had a great example of Clemson, Alabama, title game. And a lot of people saying these aren't really student-athletes. Well, Clemson was number 2 in the country in graduation behind Stanford. Alabama was number 7. There were master's like 3 or 4 master's degree holders on that field. There was something that Clemson boasts like 124 of 131 graduates over the past 7 years. So these are the kind of things we don't cover. And you're right, the negativity plays loudly in media right now.
Andrew, I liked you had a quote in your post on MMQB from Chuck Todd when he said, as far as Twitter, he said, when I get up early in the morning, it's the ultimate wire service. It becomes less readable and more opinionated as the day goes along. I have that experience every day. I mean, I get up and I check Twitter. What went on overnight? What's going on in the NFL? Who won the playoff hockey games? And later in the day, I don't want to be bombarded by people's opinions, even people who might be qualified to issue opinions. I don't want to hear that. Do you find that to be a trend in social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, the advantage of social media is you can curate it, and you can curate it as much as you can towards your own taste. And I guess you can try to make it as close to a wire service as you can. But then, as you said, all the retweets come in, the opinion comes in, no matter how you stick to sort of who you're following. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Chuck Todd said that it is a news service, and people use Twitter as a news service. I think it's got great value where, you know, it's kind of everyone used to sort of bounce around websites, and now they bounce around Twitter.
Yeah.
For media, it's invaluable. Now, I talk to people outside of media, and they don't really get Twitter. You know, they get Facebook or they get Instagram or Snapchat. They don't get it when we talk about Twitter. Like, why use Twitter? Well, Twitter for media, for information, is invaluable.
Yeah. I wish we had Andrew on, what was that, last week when Amazon made that deal and we had that big debate on how the game is taken in?
Yeah, how the game is taken in. I mean, this is where it's going, right, Andrew? This is
Yeah.
And there's no turning back in the future, right?
I think it's fascinating, the Amazon deal, because this is, like you guys were talking, Thursday Night Football streaming. And last year, Twitter, this year, Amazon, one-year deals. The NFL, to me, they're just diabolical. Because now they're throwing a little crack at Twitter. at Amazon. Maybe next year it'll be Google. The next year it'll be Facebook. Hmm. And then in 2020, you know, they'll all be bidding. So it's just an amazing – I mean, I see exactly what the NFL is doing, and it's like I said, it's diabolical.
Andrew, I want to switch topics, and I want to get to one of the posts that came out April 12th. And you talk about the league's growing gambling hypocrisy, and the NFL wrestles with this Las Vegas double standard. So what were you talking about in that article, and is there really a double standard?
Yeah, I mean, I've written a lot, talked a lot about gambling. I've covered it for now a couple years now because – I see, you know, hypocrisy might be too strong a word. I just think the NFL is having trouble wrestling this. And speaking of wrestling, it was in response to this arm wrestling thing going on with NFL players saying they're going to fine them, which we haven't seen any news that they are fining these guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they say they're anti-gambling, and they say they're anti-casino. But here's the deal. You know, you got in Green Bay where I was, we were our hotel before Sunday games was connected to a casino. One of our sponsors was Oneida Nation Casino. Lions have a deal with MGM. Two owners are investors in DraftKings. Every team has a deal with DraftKings or FanDuel for sponsor money. There's all kinds of state lottery patches on teams, training camp jerseys. You know, obviously everyone knows about point spreads. I just think, and of course the ultimate. Now we have a team in the gambling mecca of the world. So I just think the NFL needs to wrap its head around this and sort of say, well, okay, we're not anti-gambling. We're trying to protect integrity, but we're not anti-gambling. They understand this is where it's going.
Andrew Brandt is our guest, ESPN business analyst, columnist for the MMQB.SI.com. Andrew, mostly because, you know, Dan Rooney passed away last week. I believe his funeral is today in Pittsburgh. I want to get your thoughts on Dan Rooney in Pittsburgh and, more importantly, Dan Rooney's stature in the NFL and what it means when the Dan Rooneys of the NFL leave the scene, what it means for the future of business in the NFL and the future of franchises in the NFL.
Yeah, I wrote about him at the end of my post today about, you know, the impact he had on me. You know, I go to these league meetings in my 10 years with the Packers, and I'm a decent executive up the ladder, but I'm not at ownership level. And most of those owners, you know, they don't deal with people like me. You know, they're not going to talk at a cocktail party with me, but he would. And I'm not talking about me. He would talk with those under his station, if you will. And it was never a thought not to. Those people always impressed me, that spend time with people that can do nothing for them. And frankly, a lot of people in ownership in the NFL and in life, you know that, they don't do that. And he was always solicitous of younger employees around the league, not only in teams, but at the league level. That's why there's so much love for him at the league level. Roger Goodell was one of those guys. I mean, listen, Roger Goodell was like a junior employee taking advice from Dan Rooney 20 years ago. And that's why he's got such a special love for him. So it's tough when you lose people like that, kind of the heart and soul of the league that are just kind, really kind people.
And is there anyone in the wings among the ownership group who would assume that role moving forward, you know, conscience of the NFL, anybody like that?
Well, I do think, you know, there is the old guard, and most associated with the Rooneys are the Maras.
Yeah.
And they've always been, and of course they've got family ties there. Beyond that, you know, you do have a newer level of ownership that's coming in with more revenue focus. And that's, you know, it's probably too harsh to say they don't have a consciousness about the goodness of the league. But, yeah, I mean, I think there are people out there who have that. It's just, you know, you lose one and it's a big void.
Sure is. Andrew, thanks for this. We appreciate it. It's always enlightening to talk with you.
Enjoyed it, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Andrew Brandt is the ESPN business analyst, and he covers the league, business matters for the league, for Peter King's website, mmqb.si.com. And we thank Andrew Brandt for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We'll discuss some of these issues and some of the Bills' issues when we return. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more from me and Donald Jones. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We're here until 3 o'clock today. Our Twitter poll as we look ahead to the 2017 season. Want to get your thoughts on this. Who's a dark horse candidate to have a breakout season for the Bills this upcoming season? Who is under the radar right now, a guy that most people wouldn't look for? Who's a dark horse candidate to have a breakout season? 730 votes in so far in our Twitter poll, and it's close. Extremely close. Look at that. 29% of you say Kevon Seymour. 29% say Andre Holmes. 29% say it's one of the draft picks, unnamed draft pick. 13% say somebody else. Very close. Give us, if you're voting draft pick or other, give us a call. Want to hear who you have in mind, if anybody, a breakout player for the Bills. They need him for sure. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Kevon Seymour, Andre Holmes, draft pick, or somebody else. Who's going to have a breakout season for the Bills this upcoming season? Malik Ruff tweets in Pat Mahomes. Jordan Whistler tweets in Philly Brown, Corey Philly Brown. Tim James Turner tweets in Colby Listenby. Steve Noble says Tyrod will have a breakout season. Hmm. He's going to thrive in this offensive scheme. People are kind of all over the place.
On the defensive side of the ball. I hope everybody on the defense has a breakout season after the season they had last year. And I got to go to the back end of the defense. I have to go to Kevon Seymour, Jordan Poyer. I would like to see both of those guys have breakout seasons. You kind of expect Micah Hyde to have a good season. Ronald Darby, does he need to have a breakout season? Would he be considered? I mean, after his first year?
That was his first year. His rookie year was a breakout, wasn't it?
I guess so.
I think so.
But after last year, he probably needs to have another breakout season because last year he wasn't too good, you know. So he needs to come back and prove that he is a solid starting corner in this league. If not, he's not going to find himself as a starter in this league much longer.
Really think he was that bad last year?
I think he was bad enough to the point where you question if he can be a starter or not moving forward. I think he can, but last year was tough. Yeah, he better be.
He better be for this team.
Last year, you know, those guys weren't playing the same technique. That might have had something to do with why they weren't playing that well. Stephon was in a different boat. You know, he wasn't playing good in the first half of the season. He really came on in the second half of the season. Obviously, he had, five interceptions. But the running game, he wasn't helping out. But Ronald Darby was, you know, it was when the ball went up in the air and you knew he was guarding him, it was like, uh-oh, like what's going to happen? You don't want to have to feel that way with your starting cornerback.
Boy, I don't know if I feel that. I don't think he was that bad.
Hmm.
I didn't have that feeling. Hey, speaking of breakout candidates, how about Cardale Jones if he gets a chance to play? And did you see what he did over the weekend? They had their spring game at Ohio State. Cardale Jones was in Columbus for the spring game over the weekend. He tossed the football 66 yards in the air. He just heaved it downfield from his own end zone. He yarded too deep in his end zone to a just down the field. Nobody caught it. They caught it on the hop. What's the point here? I don't know. Cardale's got a strong arm. This just in.
He definitely has a strong arm.
He knew that.
I mean, he threw that flat-footed. He didn't even, crow hop or anything like that. Plus, he had on what we call butters back home, which is the Timberland boots, the tan Timberland boots. So to be able to throw the ball that far flat-footed with those shoes on, he definitely shows that he has an arm. Now we need to see him in camp and everything really put that arm to use.
Is he a quarterback?
In the right way. Yeah.
I don't know.
Just because he has the biggest arm, you know.
Got a big arm. Another more quarterback news. This one on a visit reported here at One Bills Drive yesterday. Chad Kelly, Jim Kelly's nephew, Ole Miss quarterback, reportedly made a pre-draft visit. The Bills get 30 of these pre-draft visits, and they brought in Chad Kelly yesterday. Does that mean they're going to use a draft pick on him? I don't know. Certainly, I wouldn't think an early draft pick. Kelly with the injury issues now on top of some off-field issues, that would surprise me. But
yeah.
I think it's good that they brought him in, got a little bit more background on Chad Kelly, and hopefully they had a good visit yesterday.
At this point, it's probably more of the injuries. If he doesn't get drafted, it's more because of the injuries than even the off-field issues. You know, he can't throw the ball right now for, what, 3 months or something like that, and probably 2.5 months now. That's tough, you know, when you have a guy who was already viewed as a guy with character issues and he might not go that high. I mean, he had red flags across the board. So now to not be able to throw, I don't know if he ends up getting drafted. But, you know, at this point with a guy like that, teams will start to try to build a relationship with him, you know, because if you go undrafted, we're going to be one of the ones that call you, and we want to be the first team, or we want to be a team that's, look, we brought you in, we talked to you, we started to build that relationship with you and the coaching staff. Maybe you can come here and make this team.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, the lines of communication are open. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Keep them open with Chad Kelly or any of them. We're going to break. When we come back, Steve Tasker is going to join us in studio, the Bills' all-time special teamer from the NFL on CBS, here to discuss some of these Bills' issues. And, of course, the phone line's open for you, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the team has moved into phase two of the offseason workout program. Coaches allowed on the field for the first time this offseason. The Bills' new coaching staff working with a large contingent of veterans who are here for the 3-day voluntary veteran minicamp, which started today, continues through Thursday. Yesterday, the Bills reportedly had a chance to visit with a local product. Ole Miss quarterback Chad Kelly made a pre-draft visit to the Buffalo Bills, according to reports. NFL draft expert Mike Mayock says he has the biggest arm in the draft, but Kelly, of course, has injury issues and some off-season issues. The off-season conduct policy kept him out of the combine back in February, but the Bills did have Chad Kelly in for a pre-draft visit yesterday. The Dallas Cowboys have officially picked up the 2018 option for offensive lineman Zach Martin, the fifth-year option. He was a number 16 pick in 2014, one of the best guards in the NFL since he came onto the scene. Derek Carr's surgically repaired right leg broken week 16 last year is healed enough so that Carr is a full participant in the Raiders' offseason training program. Four overtime playoff games in the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Hasn't happened in the NHL since 1980, more than 30 years. All four postseason games went to OT for the first time since April 10th, 1985. The Buffalo Bisons open up a three-game series tonight against the Norfolk Tides, the AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. 6:05 first pitch downtown at Coca-Cola Field. Right-hander Casey Lawrence on the mound for the Bisons. And the Yankees go for their ninth straight win tonight when they take the mound when Luis Severino takes the mound against the Chicago White Sox. The Yankees' win streak, their longest since a 10-game run in June of 2012. And that is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by NAPA Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, and joining us for a regular Tuesday visit, taking a little bit of time off the golf course. Happy to have Steve Tasker in studio with us. You play a lot of golf. I envy you.
I try to play golf. I got to play when I can play.
Yeah.
Because there are lots of stretches during the year I can't. So.
How does your back hold up with all that golf?
Pretty good.
Does it?
Pretty good, yeah.
So you work on it, right? Yeah. Conditioning?
I walk the course. I don't ride.
Okay.
That helps. And I don't know. I've never had a problem with my back.
You're lucky, right? You play that much golf, there'll be issues sometimes.
Well, sometimes there's some reentry shock after it's been a long winter and you come out, you know, in mid-April or whatever, late March, early April, and you're sore for a few days. But when did you get over it.
When did you start playing golf? Before you came to the NFL even?
It was after I got here to Buffalo.
Okay.
Is that because of charity events you started to do a lot of?
Some, and then it was also one of the favorite things guys did. And we were all young. It was before, you know, any of us had any kids. And, we started having kids before any of my teammates. So we started playing and stuck with it.
Who introduced you to the game?
Guys like John Kidd, Stan Gelbaugh, Frank Reich. We'd all go out. Pete Metzlars.
Gail Gilbert
was one of those guys. Daryl and Daryl would play. Daryl Vitale would play a little bit. And they'd all play in all the charity stuff. So we'd get out.
I don't want to go too far down memory lane with you here, but I think Donald would appreciate the stories from Fredonia about how you guys managed to get your golf in at training camp.
It was a different world, Murph. It was a different world.
You're going to love it.
All right, so here's how – well, I'll tell you. I don't care. What do I care? All right, here's how it went. We'd get up
– two-a-days, right?
Two-a-day practices. But, Marv, you know, we were a fast practice team, and we were a veteran team. And Marv, even then, I think was a little bit ahead of his time. He treated some the great players we had on our team like, you know, prized cows, you know, so he didn't work them too hard. So here's what would happen. Get up early in the morning, have some breakfast, go over, get ready, taped up for practice. We'd go do our morning practice, and a lot of times it would be physically a light practice, even though it's like an hour and a half long. We'd run pretty good, but we wouldn't – no contact or anything like that. After that, we'd take off, go back in, shower, run over to the cafeteria, just pick up like a sandwich, head over to – a local golf course.
Sure, right.
Play nine holes.
Yeah. Nine holes.
Play nine holes on carts and stuff, ride around, play nine holes, come back, maybe get a little snack or something, head over, get taped up, kind of lay around the locker room a little bit, just kind of fool around, get some ice or whatever, and go out and have the afternoon practice, which was a physical practice. You mm-hmm. know, it was a run game, 7-on-7. It was one-on-ones. It was, you know, pads that were padded up and stuff. And then after that, run off the field again, run back over to Shorewood, play the back nine, and then come back, eat supper, go to meetings. And
that's definitely yeah. not happening now.
It was yeah. almost every day, right, that routine would take?
Every day.
Every day.
So, you guys had to have – you know, guys playing with you that could actually hang and play, because if not, people are holding up the.
Well, I got to tip my hat to the people down at Shorewood Country Club in Fredonia. They made it easy for us. They said, "Come on in." You know, they go, "Here's your, you know, the carts are there. You can leave your clubs on them between practices and come on back." So they made it. They rolled it out for us, and it was great. They were great people. The course was fun, you know, and it wasn't you know one of those places where you're looking for an hour and a half trying to find your golf ball. It was pretty. Right. It was right out in front of you, so it was great. We had a blast.
Marv knew this was going on, and
he didn't have a problem with it. No, because yeah, right. Believe me, we practiced hard. It was a way that, you know, we had during morning stretch. No, it was afternoon stretch. Guys started chirping about their golf game, and you know, all of a sudden there's money on it. So one of the players who shall remain nameless, who, you know, it's a world leader in sacks, played in the afternoon. He had to play alone because there were eight carts full of guys who had money riding on what his score was going to be.
Mm. Wow.
So, and there was some cash on that. So, you know, he was the only guy that was playing because everybody else wanted to watch, make sure, you know, penalty shots and all this stuff. And yeah, as per usual, he won the money. So.
Amazing. And yeah. You're right. That doesn't.
It will never happen today.
It was a great bonding thing. It's just one more thing we did together that, you know, a lot of teams, you know, didn't do. We, you know, you hang out together, and training camp gave us another chance to do it.
When you look at it now, how the league is now, I mean, so much practice, so much, you know, off season workouts. Obviously, you don't have the 2-a-day practices, but, you know, they found a way to. You have a lot of meetings in between on those days.
Oh, yeah. It's different practice. Now. And there's reasons for it, though. I mean, first of all, I mean, it's a $7 or $8 billion business now. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was maybe $700 million, mm-hmm. which sounds like a lot, but not when you compare it to $7 billion, right. which it has grown into. The expectations and the responsibilities rise with the players as their cash, as their value has risen. Also, I think now. Players come out of college much more polished and ready for more sophisticated concepts on offense and defense. Now, players certainly worked into it and evolved into it, but I think now players are coming out and they expect a high level of play out of them a lot earlier than they did even back then. There was always this thing about impatience and, you know, guy got to let a guys develop and stuff. Well, you know, way back, they certainly did. You bring a guy and he, you know. Back when Marv was breaking into the league, even before he became coach of the Bills, you didn't play rookies, no matter what, and except on special teams and to fill in or in case of an emergency. Now, you know, they're capable. They're not only expected to, but they're also capable of doing it because they've been coached better at lower levels. So makes it different. Yeah, money makes it different. The players being more polished coming out makes it different. And the exposure at higher level of football at lower levels, you know, precludes the fact that you're going to start from ground zero when you come into training camp with young players.
I'm in studio with Steve Tasker. You're welcome to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Last hour, Steve, we had this conversation with Andrew Brandt from ESPN about the restrictions put on coaching staffs in these off-season workouts. coaches will complain about it, you know, how much they can't do and how much how limited they are overall by the CBA. Has it resulted in a poor quality of play, do you think? You lived through and played through that era of 25, 30 years ago, and now you obviously are a close observer with your NFL on CBS work.
Well, there's certainly room for classwork. I mean, things like that. You don't need to go on if you're going to get on the field with them. But I also think there has to be a fine balance struck because NFL coaches, like a lot, even coaches at lower levels that we've been talking about, or I've been talking about, coaching, and I tell people this, coaching is not a career and it's not a job. It's a lifestyle. Those guys work, they're a coach 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, whether they're under contract or not. They coach. That's what they do. So they feel like they need everybody else to do what they do. So everybody else needs to be in the building for 18 hours a day. And there's a fine balance between having coaches allowed to do whatever they want, bring those guys in, make them 9 to 5 in the off season, bring them in. They got to work out. They got to practice every day. They got to do all this stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like the coaches do. You know, that's ridiculous. But that's what coaches kind of work for. They expect the players to be sold out and pour every day into what they're doing, just like the coaches do. And physically and mentally and emotionally, it's just not possible. The players' rest is as valuable as training sometimes. So there has to be a balance struck. The players, they want to show up about 2 hours before game on Sunday and then go home and go sit on a beach for the rest of the week and then come back the next Sunday and play. So there's got to be a balance between just 3 hours of the game and then the 24-hour day, 7 day a week thing. And I think the players and owners are kind of going to find it. I've long been a proponent. There should be a blackout period, you know, like 3.5 months from your last game is go away. I mean, they don't want to see you. They don't want to hear from you.
Right?
Yeah, it almost is, but it's not. I mean, it should be like nothing. And well, look, that's the way it should be.
For this Bills team, last game was what, January 1st, 2nd?
That's right.
And they came back April 1st or 3rd or something?
But here's the thing. It should be, once they come back, they should be able to come back all day, every day. They should move back, start working. You know, start in, come in every day, practice a little bit, work out a little bit. Because I think then you would have a coaching staff and some organizations who would balance that better than others, and it would give them an edge. They would give their players more time off. They would give their players a chance to rest. They would give their players workouts that crescendo towards training camp and day one rather than starting them out like it's like they got to get in shape for tomorrow's game.
Right.
And an organization's ability to balance that would help them win or lose. Now, certainly there would be players that pay the price in the wrong organization, but, hey, that word would get out pretty quick. If your off-season program isn't what I'm looking for in my off-season program, I'm going to sign somewhere else. And so I think once they open the gate, it should be like 3.5 months from their last game, which means the Super Bowl teams get to come last back to start to work. And then turn them loose. Let the organizations decide what's best for their players and their team. Then everybody starts from a clean slate. They get their time off. Every team gets the exact same amount of time off, and you can balance it that way.
Steve Tasker joins us. You're welcome to join the conversation, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Did you ever have a coach, Steve, who overworked the team to the point where it was detrimental? I'm talking about NFL. A coach who pushed so hard that hurt rather than help.
I never had a coach where I started to look sideways and say, oh, man, this is nuts. You know, I never really had one of those. Now, my first training camp was in San Angelo, Texas, with the Houston Oilers, and I think there were 12 days where it was over 100 degrees, and I think 10 of those days, 10 of the 12 were over 110. So the day on one end and the day on the other is where it warmed up, and then the day on the other end is where it cooled down. It was still 100, but it wasn't 110. It was over 110. It was nuts. But, you know, they got it. I mean, we were practicing hard and stuff, and that was back in the day when training camp was still a little bit of get in shape.
Yeah.
You know, not too much because my draft class, none of us, we really didn't have to get regular jobs. But we were, I think, one of the first class, maybe there's a few before us, who most of the guys didn't have to stay in shape or didn't have to get a second job to stay in shape and make ends meet for the next season. But there was still some of that laying around the league when I first came in. So, yeah, there was some – and I know this. When I first got to Buffalo, I got here the same time Marv did, and the stories I heard about Hank Bulla were pretty horrific.
Well, that's what I was thinking of, and you, of course, did not play for
I'd never even met him, but I'll tell you what. He was not a well-liked person in the Bills' locker room but for the way he handled his club. in what preseason about, and training camp.
What about for rookies coming into this league? We were talking about, you know, how much they have to do when they're going through this whole pre-draft process. You have the bowl season, then you have, like, the Senior Bowl, then you have, you know, combines, all in between the stuff you're doing, your workouts. Then after the combine, you have your pro day, and then teams still fly you out to do other workouts. Do you think that is too much for these rookies coming in?
Yeah, I mean,
once they get drafted, they come right here straight to work.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey has turned down all private workouts, and I don't have a problem with that. I mean, you saw a guy in one of the pro days blow his knee. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you risk. It's crazy to do it. If I'm a top round draft pick, I say, hey, watch the film. You know, you see me competing in exactly what you're going to ask me to do in the pros. What am I going to show you in gym shorts? You know, so I think that's. For rookies, they got to weigh that themselves. You know, they got to say, what's my risk here? And now, for me, when I was coming out, I can remember back, and I was hoping I would get drafted. Yeah. I'd do anything they asked me to because I had to show. You know, I was one of those guys that when you saw my numbers, like my 40, my bench, my da 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 da, all the stuff they do at the combine, they're like, wow, I didn't get invited to the combine, but they would say, wow, this kid's got really good numbers, and they show up and they look at me and I didn't pass the eye test. Mm-hmm. I look like somebody's little brother. You know, I look like the real guy they're waiting on's little brother. So I didn't pass the eye test, but I would do any physical workout they asked me to, and I would always test out very well at what they asked me to do. But when they looked at me, I don't know if I want to, you know, we might get laughed off the field. We start running guys like this out there. Yeah. So that's what I was fighting against.
At what point did you develop this self-deprecating view of yourself? Back then, or is this as you look
back? Listen, you walk through that. Listen, man.
Every time you come on the show, you tell us how bad you were. Don't talk to me about the Hall of Fame.
Shoot.
That can't be the way you've walked through life.
I grew up. I spent a good chunk of my adult life in an NFL locker room. My humility is legendary because I get humbled constantly against my will. So, you know, that's why.
Are you saying you were bullied?
No, I learned how to handle it because when you're living with 53 other guys and you go walk through the locker room butt naked. Mm-hmm. And so you got to have pretty thick skin to, you know, because if you jiggle in the wrong place, you're going to get called on it. You got to have some bullets to fire back. I mean, it's just the way it is, guys.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. You can't go to work every day knowing you're not going to get, you know, made fun of.
Yeah.
So you got to get used to it. And believe me, it just keeps you humble.
Yeah, it sounds like it worked with you.
Right? Yeah, I'm emotionally scarred.
Still humbled by it.
Happy to have Steve Tasker. We're not going to humble you here, Steve. We love you here, and we're glad you're here with us today to talk about the Bills and the NFL. This offseason work that they're doing now, 3 days, and, you know, the players will spend some long days here. How much of it do you think is beneficial in the meeting room as opposed to on the field, or is it a little bit of both?
It's all beneficial. I'll tell you this, too. The less clubs are allowed to do, the more important what they're allowed to do becomes. You really got to maximize your mm-hmm. time. And coaches have got to find a way to not only max – and, you know, listen, players are used to sitting in meetings and watching film. They get – you know, that's what football is. You spend as much time in a classroom watching film and watching a chalkboard and a whiteboard or an overhead as you do on the practice field. And all that's just very important, just as important. In fact, players who are good in a classroom in college tend to be better in the NFL because they're used to learning that way. You got to sit in a classroom and put what you see in front of you on a board or on film or whatever. When you go out on the field, you got to know what it is to transfer that knowledge out there and do it live action as opposed to on a screen. So if you can do that, you're a better football player for it. And you know, that's why teams really do care about, you know, Wunderlich tests. They do care about what a kid can do in class because it makes him a better player.
I always tell people, I mean, you have – in college, there's athletes all over the place. You know, guys who are crazy fast can play football, but the difference here is they're just so much smarter because they understand the game. They know how to study. They know what they're looking for when they're going against a guy, and that's what differentiates the guys at the pros from the guys in the college game.
I was talking to a couple of weeks ago, Lance Zierlein, the UB coach. They practice out here in the field house, and He was saying how he has had to adjust, and I think you read about this too in NFL teams. He's had to adjust to the millennials, for lack of a better term, like the way they learn, their attention spans. Not, and this is not derogatory, but they just are not used to, you know, you can't, he said, you can't put them in a meeting room for an hour, hour and a half, you're going to lose them. And so they break up meeting time like that.
You have to coach the culture.
Yeah.
Your son, Luke, within culture.
I wonder if he encounters
same
that.
Thing. Yeah, and I, you know, in that a couple of weeks ago when we had dinner with Sean McDermott, he said that exact same thing. Things are much different with millennials, kids born in the 90s rather than, you know, in the 60s like I was, you know. So it's and Generation X was just before the millennials. They were different as well. So yeah, you got to know what you're dealing with, and you got to find a way, and really believe me, these clubs will reach out to experts in the field and say, how do I reach these guys? What's this? How do I reach a culture that has this quality where they, you know, they quick attention span, you know, and they'll get ideas about how to coach them up with new techniques and different. That's what these guys like Sean McDermott are paid lots of money to figure out.
It's not an easy thing because obviously you have the quick attention span, but then you have guys making a lot more money than they used to make, you know, and that's football, that's basketball, baseball. You have guys that are making so much money at 20 years old coming out of college, and they're sitting in the meeting room, like, watching the board, but they're thinking about, I think I'm going to go get this car later on, you know. Like,
it's a little bit distracting. Yeah.
But that's probably always been – I did – by the way, I meant Lance Leipold at UP. That's probably always been the case, though, right? Different people have different devotion to the attention.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one of the things I think and the league really gets right. They make everything the same as they can. And that means the clubs have to figure out how to maximize this new generational mindset that comes out. Mm-hmm. It's up to the clubs and the coaching staffs to figure out new ways to transfer information from the playbook into the minds and bodies of their players. It's they have to figure out new ways to keep these guys motivated. Plus, and it always boils down to this, you go out and you look for guys who don't need to be motivated. They're in it for the right reasons. They're in it because they – I remember – I'll never forget. I sat down with a guy in his rookie season. This was, I guess, 20 years ago. I said, what do you think about what's your long-term, short-term – what do you want to accomplish? He said, I want to be the best defensive player of all time. Mm-hmm. I'll do whatever it takes. Well, you know, and he becomes Ray Lewis, and he probably was. And that's how good those – that's how those guys think. Great ones are motivated by something other than the money and the fame and all of that. They're motivated by the deep need and desire to be great. That's what it boils down to for clubs who go out there looking for guys. You're trying to find guys like that.
Yeah.
Because not only did Ray Lewis become the greatest defensive player of all time, because of him, there's like 50 other guys whose lives were changed because they didn't want to let him down. Now they had great careers because they hung around him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's – you find those – you know, those are generational players. Those are Wayne Gretzky's and – Sidney Crosby's, you know.
And along with what we talked about, different ways of learning, there's different technology. And I wonder, both of you, and Steve, you were in the era pre-tablets, obviously. So were you, actually. You didn't have tablets when you started. What do you think that's done as far as take-home work, homework? I mean, what did you guys used to do, Steve? I imagine Mark Kelso, just in my mind's eye, probably walked out of here with film canisters every night or something.
Well, not film for me. I mean, you watched all the film in the building, but you also came home with a binder, and it was all laid out. Plus, you had notes and stuff, handwritten notes all over the binder inside it and everything. Plus, you know, your coaches, and they probably still give us quizzes on a Thursday night or a Friday. Say, here's the game plan. What's A, B, and C? What are you thinking about here? And you got to go over it again, completely soup to nuts about what's going to happen in every key play. You know. That was a big thing, and that's how you did it. You know, you just walked out with the stuff. Plus, the club did a really nice job of condensing it down to the essentials, so you didn't have 35 plays that you probably could run but probably won't. You know, they know they're going to run these 20, 25 plays, so this is what we're going to focus on. And the rest of it was a play off that. But, yeah, you condensed it down as much as you could. And then you devoured that.
Yeah, I mean, we were the same way. You know, I didn't have the tablet, so we had to write notes, take your binder home, you take your notebook home, and you better be good at writing notes, you know, because if you weren't, you were behind the eight ball. We had guys, when I first got here, that never paid attention to meetings, you know, and that's another thing you get with the millennials now. You have so many, and it's probably always been like this, but you have so many players who have always been entitled. They never really got in trouble for anything. They never really had to work hard because they were better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Then when they get here, they feel like they can get by the same way. Then they get into meetings, they don't take the notes, and you end up falling behind because you can't get the playbook because you're not paying attention in meetings. You know, we had guys that had headphones on in the meetings, sleeping in meetings, and you look around and it's like, what are you doing? Like, you're supposed to be paying attention. Then you get out on the field, and they don't have it, you know. So it's like you guys said, it is a lot different.
And it's easy to say, you know, that's why you're not in the playoffs for 17 years as an organization. But then again, that's across the board.
Yeah.
That's not just the Buffalo Bills. That's, you know, that's like Cleveland. That's, you know, that's the Bears. Mm-hmm. It's the Rams. It's the Texans. It's the Broncos. It's, you name 32 teams have that problem. And the question is, can you stay good enough to weed those guys out?
Yeah.
Or do you have the leadership in your locker room for a, you know, a veteran to come out and slap the earphones out of his head and say, right, what are you doing? Don't you know, you know, this is, you know, you're working with us now. So there's some of that that goes on. Some of these guys can be saved, even as hopeless as they are when they come in. But it takes the players and their accountability to make it happen.
I think that's why teams are going to a lot more walkthroughs, you know, because if you sit in a meeting room and just talk in the meeting room, you're going to zone out, you mm-hmm. know. But if you get us on the field where we're walking through and you get a, you know, you have the backups are on the defensive side of the ball and we're walking through different situations, now it can all come in because I'm actually focused on, okay, if I run the route this way, the linebacker might slide over to me or something like that. I think that's why teams are doing a lot more walkthroughs now. Instead of just – obviously you have to be in the classroom, but it's better to get out there on the field and do some
moving around
stuff. Yeah.
All right, we got a lot more to talk about. We'll take it up to the present time, the draft 9 days away. We'll talk with Steve about that. Some of the breakout players, we'll discuss that with Steve. And the phone lines are open if you'd like to join us, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Back with more in a moment, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Steve Tasker joins us in studio. You're welcome to join us as well. You can participate over the phones, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or on Twitter. We have a Twitter poll up. Steve, we want to get you involved in this. We've got the players out there for the first time in the voluntary veteran minicamp. We know that 9 days away will be the NFL draft, first round of the NFL draft, and still about, by my count, 19 spots left on the roster. But on the roster now, this is our Twitter poll, who's the dark horse, under-the-radar candidate to have a breakout season for the Buffalo Bills? We got 1,000 votes in already, and it's close. 30% say a draft pick this year is going to be the breakout player for the Bills. 29% say cornerback Kevon Seymour. 28% say the wide receiver they picked up from Oakland, Andre Holmes. 13% say somebody else. Steve, your vote would go to who?
Yeah, I don't think the guy's on our – I don't think he's on our roster yet, so I'd go with the draft pick. Yeah. I think there's a spot here for a guy to step in and make a difference on a team that's headed to the playoffs, I think.
Is there a position, in your opinion, that at 10 or in the top 10 period that you would stay away from?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of mock drafts have us taking the tight end, the one, you know, even the one that Doug Whaley said he liked.
Howard, yeah,
I just think it's a bad spot for us. I mean, I think we've all seen how Tyrod's strength is the accurate deep ball. When Sammy was healthy for the final 8-9 games of the 2015 season, he was top three in the NFL in three major categories: catches, yards, run after catch, or whatever, yards catch. He was a top three receiver with Tyrod as his quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go with what your team does best. If you got Tyrod at quarterback, you need to stay outside the numbers. That means, to me, taking a guy like Mike Williams, the receiver from Clemson, put him on the other side, huge and impossible matchup problem for a defense. If you're going to double both outside guys, listen, this is a team that runs the ball. They can run the ball better than anybody. They were top five defense, a top five running game last year without Tyrod. And with Tyrod, they were number one. That's not going to change, I don't think. I think they're going to get better at doing that. I think Shady's going to have another good year. I think the offensive line, they're going to bolster that. I think perhaps even in the mid to late rounds of this draft, I would think that would be a priority for them. They've already made some moves in the offseason. They kept Groy. They're picked up another a free agent as well. So they're gonna put some guys up front. They're going to continue to run the football. And with Tyrod throwing a deep ball like he does with the threat of two guys on the outside, you know, that's going to be hard for a team to throw 8-9 guys at the box to stop the Bills' running game and then still double those guys on the outside.
Regardless of what team is picking, is there a position that you typically don't like to go with in the top 10? Like we keep saying, tight end is kind of high for the top 10.
Yeah.
Even safety.
I think running back. Safety, I think more and more now safeties in the NFL are becoming almost as important, maybe even more important than corners. Depending on your defensive scheme. Mm-hmm. If you're a team like Seattle, I think safeties are critical, you know, because because they quarterback everything and they can break out of – they're rarely in one-on-one from back there, mm-hmm. and they can break out of there and make plays. They can read things. They see things. So I think safety is becoming more important, and one of the positions I stay away from in the top 10 is running back. Mm. I'm of the notion that now certainly there are guys who are kind of different, LeSean McCoy and mm-hmm. Adrian Peterson in his prime, those kind of guys, LaDainian Tomlinson, and you can go down the list. But I think for the most part, even the Bills have shown it. I mean, 2 years ago with and I can't remember the guy was here for 1 year. The rookie that we got out of Florida State. Was here for 1 year.
Carlos Williams.
Yeah. And now he's not anywhere.
Right.
But he had a good year for the Bills and did some nice things. Mike Gillisley is another player like that. Now, they're not LeSean McCoy, but certainly Gillisley brings something to the table. He's fast. Mm-hmm. When he turns the corner, he can snap off a big one. Those guys are really good. And they played for a team with the number one rushing attack in the league and contributed in a big way. So I think running back is a spot I would stay away from a lot in the top 10, and along with tight end. And although I think maybe if there's a safety I like, maybe I would take him.
So if you, in reference to our Twitter poll, if you were looking for a under-the-radar guy to make an impact this year from the draft, you'd look at what, a wide receiver, you're saying?
I do. I don't think it's going to be Holmes, although he could. A lot of times you'll see a guy, you know, he was playing behind Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. Take it from me, that's a tough lineup to break into.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there, and a lot of people always tell me, hey, when you played wide receiver, yeah, they should have played you more. Well, yeah, but I had two Hall of Famers in front of me. I had James Lofton and Andre Reed. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody's got to sit down for you to get in the game, and Andre Holmes was in that situation. Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper are maybe as good a wide receiver tandem as there is in the NFL. It's hard to break into that. So maybe Holmes is that guy and can be. But I think that's the spot that's going to do it. I think the Bills' number two is going to have to be a guy who should be a number one opposite Annie. And I think if the Bills can draft at number 10 and get one, I think that puts them in a spot offensively that they want to be in.
Got time for phone calls for Steve Tasker, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Brad calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Brad. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. You were talking about undersized football players, NFL players, and I go to camp every year down here at Fisher, and a guy Donald played with, Roscoe Parrish. I was always amazed watching him play with those guys out there. Like, how is he doing it? But two questions I got for you guys. Number one, where would Cardale Jones rank in this group of quarterbacks coming out this year, in your opinion? Where would he be in that grouping? And also, would the Bills possibly be waiting to extend or have Sammy sign his fifth-year option? Are they waiting for the draft? So say they draft a receiver in the first round, would that possibly have something to do with them waiting out on that?
Well, first of all, I think I've heard somebody saying, and I couldn't tell you, but they heard that Cardale would be just behind Trubisky in this draft is what I heard somebody say.
We have Tony Pauline last week.
Yeah, Tony Pauline.
Question came up. Mm-hmm. What did he say? He said after the first year.
Yeah, he said right after the
Trubisky
first year.
Trubisky and who?
Probably second round is what he said.
Second round, he said.
Yeah, I like Cardale a lot. I mean, he's – I think – but he'd be on the board and he'd get drafted – in this draft a lot higher than mm-hmm. he would have otherwise. And as far and I don't think – listen, I think they want to keep Sammy Watkins no matter what. I think that they're doing the right thing and taking their time. We've seen under Sean McDermott, I think they do the right thing on just about every occasion by taking their time. Mm-hmm. And by making sure that Sammy's healthy now, I mean, that's all they're doing. They're just making sure he's healthy and that everything's on schedule. I don't think there's any doubt that Sammy Watkins is a player the Buffalo Bills put at the top of their priority list and making sure that he doesn't get away. And that's that. And but they're just making sure that they're going by the book and giving themselves every advantage if things don't go as they planned.
You just spoke about, you know, drafting a guy like Mike Williams or a guy who, if your number two has to be able to be a number one for you, could that be because you're not really sure about Sammy moving forward?
No, what it does to me is it makes me look at the teams that are really good, like the Oakland Raiders mm-hmm. with those two guys, and the last year's NFC team in the Super Bowl, Atlanta Falcons. They've got Mohamed Sanu, and they've got Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. They've got two number ones, plus they've got another guy, and I can't think of his name right now. Atlanta had three of them.
Yeah.
It's a throwing league. You got to have as many big, fast, impossible matchup wideouts as you can get your hands on. I think that's why wide receivers now are much more to premium than running backs are. You got to get one of those guys. And I think if there's one available that can step in and be a physical presence out there, you got to grab him. You got to grab him.
And there is a benefit, and Steve, we talked about it. You mentioned it. There's no rush for the Bills. They have 2 weeks to make up their mind whether to, you know, apply that fifth-year option on Sammy Watkins. And why not wait and see how he gets through this few days of minicamp this week? And why not wait and see what they wind up with in the draft? I mean, what's the rush? Right?
That answers the caller's question because he asked if they were going to wait to the draft,
mm-hmm.
you know, to figure out if they were going to pick up that option. But they only have 2 weeks. You have to do it by, would you say, May?
May 2nd, 2 weeks from today. The draft is 9 days from today. Mm-hmm. So they'll know. They'll know what they have. A call here from Frank in Williamsville. Hello, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Steve, looking back, if I'm a general manager, I would say the career you've had, Steve Tasker is probably worth a draft choice. You came out of college or whatever, 1985 or 6 or whatever it was. My question is are there any players that are worth picking as a special teams guy and using a draft choice for them? Or do they always have to be a free agent that somebody picks up, you know, kind of secondarily?
I'd have to say no, for the simple fact of the way the college game is structured. If you're a good enough athlete to get to the next level, which is this, you know, the NFL level, you're usually a good enough athlete to get on the field. Plus, most players who are that good an athlete don't play special teams in college. Mm-hmm. It's a learned skill. They're on the field playing down and distance in college. Now, you may have a guy who's a Heisman candidate who's going to return kicks, or something, or return punts or something like that. But you're not going to find a guy who has made his living covering kicks that has shown the ability to do that in such a way that you say, wow, we got to draft him instead of this tight end. You know, I would say no, just because of the way the game is structured and because of the, the NFL is just athletics. You don't get signed unless you can jump through a hoop that says you can run, jump, lift, twist, turn, sprint, explode, all of that stuff. You have to be a certain level of athlete before you even get a contract. If you're that type of athlete, you're too good in college to play special teams.
And that's just the way it is. They don't draft guys, even in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, to say, all right, we're drafting him just for special teams. Like, you hope this guy can be a player eventually. Now, there are teams out there that, regardless, you can go in the first round, you're going to play some special teams for them. The Patriots are like that. But they want you to be able to contribute in offense and defense as well. If not the first year, your second, third year, you need to be making that turn into being a good offensive or defensive player.
Steve, you went in the ninth round, right?
Yeah, I was 226 overall I was taken.
And did the Houston Oilers at the time lay out for you, hey, we look at you as a special teamer, or did they say you're a receiver?
I was going to be a kick returner, punt returner / wide receiver, yeah. I was a return guy.
Return is a little different. When we're talking about special teams, we're talking about being a gunner or you know, a guy running down,
kicks,
making tackles. Yeah, covering kicks.
Yeah, that's a
like
special
that.
Teams guy. Yeah.
The returners are a little bit different because they will draft
guys,
the returner.
Yeah, return guys are different. It's either – you're either going to cover covering mm-hmm. kicks in special teams. I mean, that's what we're talking about, exactly. And that's what it really boils down to. Kick returners are guys who, oh yeah, he's also a kick returner. Mm-hmm. So that's
different. You know, it's like you hold them in very high regard. Returners.
No, I mean, hey, I did it, and there is not a worse job in football than punt returner.
Oh.
There is not a worse job in football. There is no more pressure-packed spot in football than returning punts because the whole team can be playing like gangbusters and you could lose it for them.
I'm telling you.
And that's a lot of pressure on every punt.
Bruce DeHaven, my rookie year, he asked me to go catch some punts after practice. And I was like, Coach, I'm going to go catch some punts for you. But I just want you to know this is not my forte here. Like, it's – You see how fast these gunners get down there? Like they're in your face when you're catching the ball. You have to be a different level of quick, not just fast, but quick to get out of the way of the first guy. You usually got to make one guy miss, and that's usually Steve Tasker. You know what I'm saying? And he's coming down with his head on fire trying to take your head off.
And I don't miss.
Right.
But that's the one unhumble thing I said. I'll tell you this, though. Bruce DeHaven also had that same thing with me. He came to me, and not in my first jerky year. It was mm-hmm. my 11th year. Mm. And this is the kind of pressure that it was. I was a special teams guy that 7-time pro. Nobody's ever gone to that many. And he came to me and said, I want you to cover start returning punts for me. This is like midway through the year. And I'm telling you, this is a – gospel truth. He told me on a Wednesday day, I couldn't sleep Wednesday night. I couldn't sleep Thursday night. And Friday night, I was laying in bed, keeping myself awake too, until I finally got my mind around it. It was really stressful because it is hard.
I just knew
that I was going to do something that was going to cost us a game. I was 3 punt returns shy of leading the league.
And he's still humble.
But that was when I flipped. Finally, I got my mind around. I said, you know what? This is a chance to help. This is a chance to show off. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a chance to really. You know what? I'm going to do this, and I'm going to own it. You know, I'm not going to be one of those guys. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to own this. I'm going to do it. So that's when I got my mind around it. Could get my mind to the fact where I saw it as an opportunity rather than as a burden. You know, everything changed, and okay. But I'm telling you, it took a while to get there.
Amazing. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this and some other news items. So come on back for more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Steve Tasker live in our studio, One Buffalo studio. And news coming out today, Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, reporting that the Patriots have extended an offer sheet, signed him to an offer sheet. Mike Gillisley, Bills running back, who we talked about a couple of hours ago on the show. Reportedly, Ian Rappaport says it's a $6.4 million offer over 2 years, $4 million in the first year. The Bills have 5 days to match, so you can do the math there. Mm-hmm. If they elect not to match that offer sheet, they get a fifth-round pick in return from the New England Patriots. Reaction.
Well, they're taking the draft pick.
Yeah. Take the draft pick, let them go. You know, this is said to be a deep running back class. You can find a running back, especially later in the draft. I mean, there's going to be some running backs still on the board. I think you got to let Mike Gillisley go. You're not going to pay him $4 million as your backup in his first year. You're not going to match that contract. I don't see it happening.
No, you're not. And I think, a lot of Bills fans will say, wait a minute, this is a flashback to Chris Hogan of last year.
Similar.
Chris Hogan got very similar. And you're right, it is. But it's something that – and this is really basically what the players' union was hoping would happen when they put this clause in the CBA, that a backup player would be able to move and get a bump in pay from a team that he wasn't going to get on the field with to a team that he could get on the field with. And now I think the big question is in New England's court, what's this due to LeGarrette Blount?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd like to think maybe if LeGarrette Blount comes on the market, the Bills would pay him $4.5 million and get a fifth round draft pick and let the Patriots have Mike Gillisley. And that'd work out like a trade. But I'm sure the reason LeGarrette Blount is not signed there is because he's asking for significantly more than that.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money to tie up and back up back to $4 million, no matter who he is, isn't it? Gillisley?
Well, no, it always depends on who he is.
Yeah, but would you spend
LeGarrette Blount would help.
Sure he would. And he'd be an upgrade over Gillislee.
He would help a lot. And I think, yeah. And plus, he'd give you an edge every time you played the Patriots, you know, which you do twice. And there's a little bit extra. I think there's a little bit of incentive there just to have an extra, a guy who's extra motivated to go back there and play. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying it kind of would make some a little sense if LeGarrette Blount is ousted because of the presence of Mike Gillislee now on the roster and the Patriots don't need LeGarrette Blount. He's going to play somewhere.
Yeah.
With LeSean McCoy obviously getting up there in age, I think he's, what, 29 now? Getting up there in age, you don't know how much longer he can play at his level. How does this change the Bills?
It does. It does, right? Now they have an extra – if they don't match, they'll have an extra pick that would give them seven picks, including three in the fifth round if they don't match. But, yeah, it changes their draft strategy. Mm-hmm. I think there has to be a running back somewhere along the line there.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. But like Don said, this is a good draft for those guys.
Yeah. Much of this, fellas, we're almost out of time here, how much of this – and, again, the Hogan thing is in the back of everybody's mind – how much of this is the Patriots really liking Mike Gillislee, or how much is it them saying, hey, let's fool around with Buffalo a little bit again?
Well, I think they liked him, no question, because they had him in for an interview and they took their time doing it. But, and there is something to be said for – there is a philosophy out there for, hey, in our free agent market, we're going to focus on the teams in our division, because if we get their guys, we get better, they get worse. Mm-hmm. That works to a certain extent if you can get them for the right value, which the Patriots have been able to do. But I don't think this is them thinking so much about that as it is he fits their mold.
Yeah.
Much like Chris Hogan did, they've got a role that he can play.
I mean, they've been looking for that back. They had LeGarrette Blount. They brought in Adrian Peterson. There were rumors about Marshawn Lynch. And now Mike Gillislee. It's like they've been looking for a big bruising back. They weren't able to get LeGarrette Blount back. But for me, does Mike Gillislee now become their number one? I mean, that's the question mark. I know they rotate running backs like every game, but Mike Gillislee has to be like their starter now.
You sure? Deion Lewis? Look, they'll play it. They'll start a different guy every week, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Deion Lewis would start. I think they Burkhead, they have Rex Burkhead now on the roster. They'll probably start. I bet four different backs start games for the Patriots next year, the way they do it.
You know, yeah. And you're right. The crazy thing is, like, they'll have one guy sitting down 1 week, like a healthy scratch. Like, 1 week, Mike Gillislee might not even be suited up.
Right.
And next week, he'll play 25. He'll carry it 25
And you know who
times.
He'll play against.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, like, another thing, too, Bills. is true, too. They are big on getting guys to play above their contract. They're getting value for this. And when you get a guy like a Chris Hogan or a Mike Gillislee, and you – listen, those guys were making good money. I mean, like, you know, $1 million or whatever they were making. But now you're going to give the guy life-changing money, $4 million. He's going to play hard for that. Yeah. He's going to fulfill the role. He's going to – guys come in grateful for that role you've given them, and they're going to get the most out of those guys. They're going to get the most out of Mike Gillislee, like they got the most out of Chris Hogan, and they get guys to play hard because they're finding guys who are the right mentality, the right temperament, unselfish players who will go in and be good team guys and play hard, because they know they're getting well compensated like they never have, and it's a great philosophy. But let's face it, guys like that are hard to find. Now, they've done it twice on Buffalo these last 2 years, but you know those guys aren't everywhere around the National Football League.
All right, Steve, thank you. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Great being back.
Steve Kasker will be back with us next week. We've got more to come. We're going to talk with Agent Joel Corey when we return. We'll ask him about this deal and about restricted free agents, matching those contract offers, plus a lot more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapping up the first day of their voluntary veteran minicamp with news coming from New England. The Patriots have signed Mike Gillislee to an offer sheet, according to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. The restricted free agent, if the Bills now have 5 days to match. If they don't match, the Patriots owe them a fifth-round draft pick. The offer sheet reportedly worth $6.4 million over 2 years, with $4 million in the first year. It is vaguely familiar of the Patriots bringing Chris Hogan away from Buffalo as a restricted free agent a year ago. Mike Gillisley, the Patriots have signed him to an offer sheet. The Bills have 5 days to decide whether to match. Buffalo players, the veterans on the field inside the fieldhouse today for phase two, the first day of phase two of the offseason workout. It is voluntary veteran minicamp. Coaches on the field with the players for the first time since this new coaching staff arrived. Just individual drills allowed, no offense or defense. Yesterday, the Bills reportedly had Chad Kelly in for a visit. The St. Joe's Collegiate Institute product and a graduate of Ole Miss in for a pre-draft visit to the Buffalo Bills. Described by many as having an NFL-caliber arm, but still some injury concerns and character concerns for Chad Kelly off the field. The Dallas Cowboys have decided to pick up the fifth-year option on offensive lineman Zach Martin, the number 16 pick in 2014, who's developed into one of the better guards in the National Football League so far. A.J. Hawk has decided to retire from the game. He played 9 seasons in Green Bay. He told the club of his decision to retire with the Packers. He was the fifth overall pick in the 2006 NFL draft, the linebacker out of Ohio State. Derek Carr, surgically repaired right leg, broken week 16 last year, is healed enough, so he's a full participant in the Raiders' offseason workout program. Baseball, the Norfolk Tide's in town to play the Buffalo Bison, start of a 3-game series tonight. The first game of Buffalo's second homestand of the season, 6 games in 6 days. 6:05, the first pitch at Coca-Cola Field, the Bisons and the Norfolk Tides tonight. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to talk a little bit more about NFL business. We are happy to have former agent, now CBSSports.com commentator, Joel Corey on the line with us. Joel, thank you very much for joining us. John Murphy and Donald Jones, we appreciate it. We just, adjusting to the news of Mike Gillisley signed to an offer sheet by the New England Patriots. Joel, what do you think of this deal, and what do you think the Patriots have in mind here to make a move like this?
I think it means bye-bye LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah.
He won't be re-signed if the Bills don't match the offer sheet. And I got to wonder what's going on with the Bills and their offer sheets, because they seem to be the only team which really has consistently other teams extending offer sheets. They're restricted free agents. Seems like they're trash in one respect. Is could be Bill Belichick's treasure. Chris Hogan last year, this year Gillisley. So I don't know what's going on there. They need to do a better job of properly evaluating the tenders for their restricted free agents.
Well, are you saying they're undervaluing their trash, or maybe they just – I don't know. What are you saying? Are they undervaluing these players?
They're making mistakes on the tenders, because give a second-round tender if you really want to keep a guy, because nobody gives up a second-round pick for a restricted free agent. Hasn't happened in several years. If you have a low pick, a third-day pick, or just matching rights, that's an invitation for a team to take your guy, because that's 3 offer sheets in 2 years for Bill's restricted free agents. Something's wrong there.
Joel, Ian Rappaport has reported that the Patriots structured the Mike Gillisley deal to make it tough for the Bills to match. So do you recall how they structured the Chris Hogan deal from last year, and how could they make it difficult for the Bills to match it?
Oh, you always do that with a guy where they're matching rights. That's what you guys did to get Charles Clay from Miami as a transition guy. You had a balloon payment in the second year so that it wouldn't be matched. And when you had Chris Hogan supposed to make about 1.7 last year, and he was going to make 5.5 in the first year of an offer sheet, yeah, that team's not going to match that. So, yeah, you do that by design, because you took away any real poison pills with the offer sheets, so you have to front-load them or throw a lot of guaranteed money in there to discourage the team from matching the offer.
Hey, Joel, tell me what you think the Gillisley offer sheet signing by the Patriots does mean to LeGarrette Blount. As you said, it means bye-bye to him, but this has been an interesting dance those two sides have been going through for the last couple of weeks now. Just tell me what your analysis of that contract dance they've done.
Yeah, if they're going to pay him 6-4 over 2 years, they're not signing LeGarrette Blount after getting Rex Burkhead for about $3 million on a one. He better start calling the Green Bay Packers, because they need a running back, and he really should want to find a job before the draft, because it's a deep year in the draft, and once people start drafting backs, they start changing their opinion on their team needs, and he may have a long wait to get a job, even though he led the NFL in rushing touchdowns of 18 and had over 100 rushing yards last year.
How far apart were they, though, the Patriots and LeGarrette Blount?
Patriots play hardball. They did that with Julian Edelman a couple of years ago. He couldn't generate any real interest in free agency. That's why he came back on a deal averaging $4.5 million a year. Blount played last year, made $1.7 million with incentives, one-year deal at $1 million. So they had no incentive to go out and really give him some sort of huge offer. Maybe they would have adjusted if someone forced their hand, but knowing that it was a soft market last year for him, knowing that the running back market's soft generally for vets, they weren't going to put anything out there that he was going to take immediately. They were going to make him work for it, and another team was going to have to force their hand.
Joe, when you see the Patriots making all of the moves that they've made in this offseason, big contracts and things that you don't typically see from the Patriots during the free agency period, what does that say to you about, I guess, their window to win?
They're loading up for Tom Brady's last couple of years. Father Time's going to catch up to him like it does everybody else. I don't know when it's going to be. He says he can play 6-7 years. I'm very skeptical of that, but I still think Bill Belichick's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers with some of the moves he's made. What I really want to see is once Brandon Cook's option year is up, do they finally pay a wide receiver? The only wide receiver they've really ever paid at a high level was Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of wide receivers, they just made Amendola take a pay cut.
Oh, that's an annual occurrence. That's like a rite of passage because he signed a deal to replace Wes Welker at $6 million a year, and they usually chop that thing down to about $1.5 million and give him another $1.5 million to $2 million he can earn back in incentives. So I'm surprised it took this long.
On the line with Joel Corey, former sports agent, writes about NFL contracts and cap issues for CBSSports.com. Joel, who, as we approach the draft, which teams do you think have made the most shrewd moves in free agency, and not just who they've signed, but who they've let go, who they've moved on from over the last 6 or 8 weeks or so?
I think it was really interesting that Green Bay didn't really make a huge effort to re-sign Eddie Lacy when that was a problem last year. When he got hurt because Tyrone Montgomery converted from wide receiver to running back. I like Jacksonville's moves in free agency and getting A.J. Bouye and Calais Campbell, but let's see if it finally translates into wins because they're active in free agency every year, but they always end up having a top-five pick in the draft. That's really all on Blake Bortles this year. I like the Raiders going out and getting Jared Cook when he may have priced himself out of Green Bay, who got Martellus Bennett, that was the best tight end available. So I like those moves.
We're on the line with Joel Corey, former sports agent, and on a recent post at CBSSports.com, Joel, now approaching the draft, there is a track record that you point out about recent draft history and first-round quarterbacks. I guess we all kind of intuitively knew this, but you've looked at, the last 9 drafts and found that successful first-round draft picks at quarterback are what, less than 50-50 proposition, huh?
Yeah, it's not pretty because teams will reach for quarterbacks just like they overpay for veteran quarterbacks that aren't worth it, like a Brock Osweiler, and we'll see if Mike Glennon falls in that category. If you've got a legitimate potential franchise quarterback in the draft, do everything you can. If you need a quarterback to get in a position to take him, if there's one not available, like it appears to be this year, don't reach and take one like the Jets at 6. Don't do that. If you're going to take one of these guys, take them late in the first round or wait till next year when the crop could be better with Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, potentially the two L.A. school quarterbacks. Or I'd try to pry A.J. McCarron away from the Bengals for a second-round pick.
Joel, now with the new CBA, these guys that get drafted in the first round don't make – obviously, like nearly as much money as they used to make back when, let's just say, Sam Bradford was drafted. So when teams are reaching now and drafting these guys, you know, how far back does it set the team? I mean, it's not that much money, right?
Oh, yeah, you're not paying a guy at the top five pick. Like if Andrew Luck or Cam Newton had been under the old system, those mm-hmm. deals would have been averaging $16 million a year. So you're talking $7 million a year at the top of the draft. For a quarterback, which is the best value if he's good, But that only applies to, like, the top five, six picks. The spread's not that different from everywhere else in the draft. But if you miss on a quarterback, then that's a pick that you could have used to shore up another position, and you don't go out and try to find a quarterback instead. And if you don't have a quarterback, you're really nowhere for the most part. So it can really set your franchise back several years.
Yeah, and when you don't have a quarterback, you're inclined to reach in the first round, aren't you, Joel? I mean, you said – you know, your advice a minute ago was if nobody in this draft might stack up to be a project as a good, successful NFL quarterback, wait until next year. It's hard for teams to wait and not take a flyer on a quarterback, isn't it, if they don't have one?
Yeah, it is hard, but I think you need to exercise a little patience with the position, even though it's hard enough to win or when you have a quarterback consistently. And it's so much harder if you don't have one, but it's better to be patient than to invest money on the wrong guy. I don't know how Houston found a way to get Cleveland to take Brock Osweiler off their hands. Nobody saw that coming. That was a unique basketball-type move. Here, we'll give you a pick. Take this guaranteed money, and it's a substantial amount. But the moral of the story has always been if you don't have a quarterback, you're desperate to get one, and you don't make the most rational decision when you're in that position.
And all that being said, in your post agent's take on CBSSports.com, you said it's, from all accounts, it's probably going to be, what, four quarterbacks chosen in the first round next week?
I think at least three. Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, and Patrick Mahomes definitely will probably go in the first round. We'll see at the back end of the first round if Davis Webb from California or Deshone Kizer from Notre Dame sneak in the first round. But if it's not a great quarterback year, as an average of 2.6 per year past 10 years, don't take four in the first round if it's not a good year, because you're likely to end up more like 2011. Cam was an obvious no-brainer at number one. But you had guys like Jake Locker, who's been out of the league for a couple of years, Blaine Gabbert, and Christian Ponder, who haven't really turned out to be long-term starters as first-round picks. Or you guys kind of reach for a guy in E.J. Manuel. So you guys know exactly what I'm talking about in terms of taking a quarterback a little higher than you should.
Joel, so when you look back over the I guess, 8-9 years that you did in your post, which one was the worst draft? And let's take the 2013 draft out just because E.J. Manuel was the only one to go in the first round.
I might have to go with 2007 when you had Jamarcus Russell and Brady Quinn, because that's 0-for-2 and Jamarcus went number one. And he was one of the reasons you got rid of the old rookie system and you put in the rookie wage scale, which depresses salaries at the top of the draft, because he made a little over $39.5 million over the 3 years where he was a bust in Oakland and one of the biggest draft busts in history. So for Jamarcus Russell alone, I'm going to go with 2007.
Last question for you, Joel. We get back to the Gillislee deal and, you know, with the Patriots, if those numbers are correct, $6.4 million over 2 years, $4 million up front. As Donald pointed out, it's described as a deal difficult to match. Would it be smart for the Bills to attempt to match that deal that New England has put on the table for Mike Gillislee?
No, I think that ship has sailed. If you really wanted to keep him, you should have put the second-round tender on him for $2.746 million instead of the low tender for $1.797 million. It's about $1 million difference. But he was the guy you really wanted to keep for the 2017 season. That was the route to go.
Okay. Hey, Joel, thanks for this. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Joel Corey, former sports agent, writes for CBSSports.com, Agent's Take. He's got recent draft history about first-round quarterbacks, like a 40% success rate for first-round quarterbacks. Some interesting stuff there and interesting stuff on Gillislee. The inference I get is they put the tender on. They wanted to put on Mike Gillislee, Donald, and knowing that he would be at risk to go for that amount for a fifth-rounder as opposed to a second round. And Joel pointed out, you know, it's a second round tender would have been a difference of about $1 million.
Right.
They know, you know, they have a value on their player. They don't go into this blindly. They stuck with their value. And as he said, it's very, very unlikely that ship is, you know, very unlikely that Gillislee comes back.
Yeah,
he says the ship
unlikely.
Has sailed.
I would think that the ship has sailed. I don't think you're going to pay him $4 million in his first year, especially if you didn't offer him that. You know, if you didn't offer him the second round tender, you're definitely not going to pay him $4 million for him to come in and just be your backup running back. You know, it just doesn't make sense to do. I could see if you know, LeSean McCoy was hurt or something like that, and you didn't know what you were getting out of him coming up, then you say, we need to make sure we have a solid guy. Let's keep him. But you don't have that situation. So
right.
I think, you know, that ship has sailed. I think that now they do have to look to, you know, you look out there on the free agent market, maybe you can get a guy in here, maybe a guy like LeGarrette Blount. He would be, a good complement to LeSean McCoy. I know this does. Now you really got to pay attention to Jonathan Williams and, you know, even Mike Tolbert, those guys who are going to be the backup, could be the backup running back, and you have to look to the draft.
Got to look to the draft.
Yeah, you have to. You have to draft one.
Yeah, and I don't know about a free agent running back. If you're not going to pay Mike Gillisley, you really want to pay any veteran? I mean, get a younger, cheaper running back. We all know how backs have been devalued in recent years. And you can get them at your price at the, you know, the rookie minimum, right? The rookie weight scale.
My question now becomes where, you know, what round are we talking? You know, or do you use a third round pick on a running back, or do you just say we'll pick one up in the fifth round? You know,
you're asking me somewhere in the third to, you know, fifth round, sixth round territory. If they don't match the offer for Gillisley, they would have an extra fifth, which would give them three picks in the fifth round and mm-hmm. a total of one, two, three, four, well, five picks from rounds three through round six. So yeah. It's going to be – it does factor into the draft strategy, no question about it.
They definitely have to draft one. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how high they – you know, if they see one they like, I don't think they would take one first or second. The earliest I would see is round three going with the running back. But who knows? Maybe they end up – maybe there's a guy on the board in round two that they're like, we got to get this guy.
Here's a call from Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Great show as always. Tasker's always good. I've got I don't know. I've got a big problem with this Gillisley thing and them not meeting this offer. LeSean McCoy, you know, we all know about LeSean McCoy, and he's obviously a great back, but he's getting older, and he is kind of injury prone. You know, I have to disagree with Donald on that one. And Gillisley. There's your proven backup. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. And this is why New England loves to steal Buffalo's lunch money. I'll tell you, they just like to do it. And if they get a chance to do it, they will do it. And they're going to do it now, just like they did it with Chris Hogan. So,
well, how do you say McCoy missed one game last year? Is that injury prone? I would argue not. LeSean missed one game last year.
Yeah. Regardless, though, guys, I mean, you're
regardless of the facts. I mean, how is he injury prone? He missed one game last year, three the year before that. He's getting older. I think eventually you're going to have to want to replace him. I agree with you there. I just don't know if that's. I don't think that's a priority. Backup running back on a team.
Why would you? I mean, to me, I know it's a money thing. It's always a money thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, if New England has shown interest in a guy. They very seldom make mistakes. There's a reason they're doing this. And I think
I disagree with that, too. New England has the ability to cover up mistakes because they have a Hall of Fame quarterback. So when they make a personnel miscue, it's covered up because the quarterback makes everything good, I think.
Well, of course he does. I mean, the quarterback makes a difference in every team. But, you know, you got to give it to Belichick. I mean, the guy has got a system. The guy has worked the system for years and years and years. And it works great for him. And he's got his eye out for anybody that can make a difference. And he knows Mike Gillisley can make a difference because you better believe he saw him play. They play him twice, like always. And I just think – I don't want to take up too much time. But
Donald, anything to add to any of this?
Here's the thing with me. I feel like you can't get into a situation if and I heard what Joel Corey said, you know, they need to start looking at – where they're putting the tenders on these guys. But you can't get into a situation where, you know, you value a guy at a certain number and then a team like the Patriots come in and they offer, which they're going to do. I mean, that's just what they're going to do. They make an offer and now you end up chasing. Now you have to match. You know, I don't think you want to get into that situation. You want to be in a situation like the Patriots are where it's like this is where we value at mm-hmm. and – you can decide that you want to play for this money or you can go ahead and get money somewhere else.
Look, part of maybe the biggest part of Doug Whaley's job is to find the right, correct value for his team for every one of 53 players, 90 players now on the roster, right?
Yeah.
Find the value to you for every one of those players. So we assume with the fifth-round tender put on Mike Gillisley that that's the value Mike Gillisley had for the Buffalo Bills. Patriots have assessed it differently.
Right.
Patriots also get a chance to, you know, strike a blow at the Bills, but I think we agree that's secondary to their assessment of what Mike Gillisley can do for them. So we'll see how it plays out. The Patriots have the Super Bowls and the track record. There's no question about that. You cannot dispute that. But, look, the Bills didn't get hoodwinked here. They knew what they knew what the value was in their mind on Mike Gillisley, and that's the that's what they're living with now.
The Patriots still have, like, you know, $13 to $15 million, and they had a lot of money this year, you know, and they see the window closing on Tom Brady. I don't care what he says. Just like Joe Corey said, they see the window closing, and so – now you see them making crazy offers to different guys, and they want to make sure that they can win for the next however long Tom Brady is going to play. 2 or 3 years is what I think he'll end up playing. But that's why you see them making these types of offers. He fits their type of system, and when he fits their type of system, they will make that offer. But you've seen them also let other guys go. You know, like they let Jamie Collins go. There's probably no other team in this league that would let Jamie Collins go. Just like, nah, you can go ahead. You know, we'll trade you to Cleveland, because we're not paying you this type of money. You're one of the best linebackers in the game, but sorry, we don't see you as one of the best, you know. But we'll go ahead and pay Dante Hightower that money. So you don't – for me, the Bills don't want to get into a situation where you're chasing all of these other teams in terms of money, because a team now goes out and says, we're, you know, we're placing this offer on this guy, you match it. So now the Bills end up running out of money because you're trying to match what every other team is offering your guys. The same situation with Ryan Groy. They already matched that offer.
Right.
Now you find yourself in a position where you have to match another offer for a guy who's a backup. I just don't – it doesn't make sense to me.
No, you make your own personnel evaluations. You put your own values on these players.
Yeah.
And you live with it. And they will live with it or die with it. Right?
Right.
They will live or die with this decision just as they do with every other decision. All right, we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to have Leonard Johnson on the show with us. He is a Bills defensive back, signed in free agency about 6 weeks ago. He'll be joining us coming off the practice field in the next few minutes. And, of course, we welcome more of your phone calls, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're going to get Bills cornerback Leonard Johnson in studio with us in a couple of minutes. He's got an interesting story to tell. He's been around a little bit. In the meantime, we're talking about this offer sheet. The Patriots have signed Bills backup running back Mike Gillisley to an offer sheet. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, says it's a two-year deal worth $6.4 million, $4 million in the first year of the deal. Bills have 5 days to match. If they don't match, they get a fifth-round draft pick in exchange from New England. They already have a couple of fifth-rounders. I wonder, Donald, we'll never know the answer to this question. I wonder how much Mike Gillisley factored into the Bills' plans this year. And if, in fact, they were going to, you know, they've let some players go, you know, the guys who played last year. I wonder if they thought, let's give him this restricted tag and see if we can coerce somebody to give us a draft pick for him, which appears to be the way it's going.
I mean, we had talked about they only have six draft picks and how hard it is to trade back in the draft. In a draft that's very deep, are teams willing to part ways with a draft pick? I don't know about that, you know. So if you only have six draft picks, you got to find a way to pick up some draft picks. So this could be a way. Let's dangle this, because especially in a draft that's deep with running backs, you know. Mike Gillisley, regardless of how many touchdowns he had, I get it. But he's your backup running back. He really is your backup running back. So you're not going to give him a second-round tender when he is a backup. You know, it was the same thing with Ryan Groy. He's a backup on your team, you know. So you tender him at whatever you place that value is, and that was wherever he was drafted. Mike Gillisley was drafted in, what, the fifth round?
Yeah, so that's why he's a fifth-round tender.
Right,
yeah.
So that's why he got a fifth-round tender. So for me, I mean, maybe that was it. Maybe they were trying to dangle it and pick up another draft pick. Or maybe it was just like, listen, we're not going to give you a second round tender. We're not going to give you a first round tender. We're going to tender you at where you were drafted. And if another team comes and takes you, then we can find a running back with one of these extra picks that we're going to get in the draft.
Yeah, it's one way to do it. And again, it all comes down to your evaluation, your team's evaluation of who Mike Gillisley is, who Ryan Gray is, for that matter.
Right.
They put a low tender on Ryan Gray. He was undrafted, right?
He was right, you know. So, I mean, you evaluate your guys, and then you give them a tender based on where you evaluate them. And then if another team comes in and says they want to, you know, overpay that guy, then it is what it is.
And maybe in the Patriots' mind, they're not overpaying him, you know.
Right. You know, the Patriots have been looking for a running back. And we just said the Patriots have a lot of money, you know, and LeGarrette Blount, they couldn't get him to come back, or for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't want him. Maybe he was asking for too much money. But he's not back there. But they showed signs of we need a big back. We need a guy who can get those short yardage first downs. We need a guy who can really pound the ball in there once we get into the red zone. Mike Gillisley, obviously touchdown Mike, has showed that he can do that. So let's go ahead and pay him. We don't have that much longer to win. Tom Brady won't be here for another 7 years, so we need to go ahead and get everybody on this team, get all of the weapons around him so that we can continue to win at the pace that we've been winning. We'll go ahead and part ways with this fifth-round pick. The Bills, you can go ahead and get a fifth-round pick. Hopefully you make the right choice with that pick. I mean, that's just what it is. That's the job of a GM, is to evaluate your guys. You put a tender on them. Another team comes in and they take them. All right, well, now we have to go back to the draft, which is where you build out your roster and draft the right guy.
Mike Gillisley had a pretty good game against New England last year, 12 carries, 85 yards, one touchdown in that game, had his biggest game. The biggest game of his career was 91 yards in the Christmas Eve game against Miami last year, 91 yards on how many carries? 11 carries, 8 touchdowns last year. Mike Gillisley, he's going into his fourth year in the league, first year with Miami, last 2 years with the Buffalo Bills, 2 starts for the Bills over the last 2 years in relief of LeSean McCoy, which, look, LeSean's 2 years ago kind of babied that hamstring along the entire season. He had to, but missed one game last year. I don't think he's injury prone.
No,
I don't think he has yet. I don't think you can call him that.
Right. He's come back and he's played through those hamstrings. If LeSean McCoy was, like, constantly injured and not being able to play in games, yeah, but he has, what, he missed one game last year.
Yeah.
You know? And so it is what it is, man. Mike Gillisley is your backup running back. You're not going to give him a second-round tender. You give a second-round tender to a guy who's a starter on your team. You know, that's how I feel. Like, the Patriots gave a first-round tender to Malcolm Butler. You give a second-round tender, a first-round tender to a guy who is a starter on your team. If he's not a starter, you have to go with the lower tender, because if you tender him higher than what you feel or what he is on your team, then it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Here's a call from Jack in Rochester. Hello, Jack. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi. I have a quick question for Donald today. You know, in the paper you're reading all about these draft picks, and they do these different kind of grades on them, different, you know, evaluations of their abilities in different areas. But I hear this also during the season, you know, with the veteran players, where they say they get graded after the games and there's this grading process.
Mm-hmm.
Is those grades for the coach's eyes only, or does someone sit down with a player and have this kind of report card in front of them and say, okay, this is what your grades are?
That really depends on your coach. When I was here, our coaches would give us our grades from the game. They would also give you how many MAs you had in the game, you know, missed assignments or MAs, missed assignments in the game. They would let you know how many you have if you had a bunch of them. And you don't want to have missed assignments in the game, and that's what really lowers your grade. You want to know all of your assignments and then be able to perform them at the best of your ability, and that's how you get higher grades.
Do they do it in a group setting or one-on-one, or how did they do it when you were here?
They would do it one-on-one, especially if you sucked in that game. Like, they're like, all right, let's sit down and talk about how bad you did in the game. If you're doing good, you know, they sit down with you and they tell you that as well. But the grades are one thing. From your coaches, you obviously want to know that, you know all your assignments and you're doing everything right. You're scoring touchdowns. Ultimately, like, if you're a guy who – I remember when I got to New England, they would always tell me about, like, Wes Welker and all of those guys. They ran the wrong routes all the time. But, you know, Tom Brady would find them and he'd, you know, see them and throw it to them and they scored touchdowns, right? And I'm sure those guys' grades were horrible. I'm sure Bill Belichick hated the fact that they're not getting any of their routes right, but they're scoring touchdowns and they're winning games, you know. So the grades are one thing, but if you're winning the games and you're scoring touchdowns, that's a total different thing, you know. So it's kind of like you got to balance it out there.
Call from Manny in Hamburg. Hello, Manny. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. I have a not a question, but a theory. Let's give the give the Bills brain trust some credit here. Maybe they anticipated this problem with Gillislee, and that's why they're carrying two fullbacks, which I think both of them will make the squad. So now maybe Tolbert will be the running back, will be the backup to Shady, and in the situation where third and one, fourth and one, we'll have one fullback running the ball, the other fullback blocking. It's going to be hard to stop. And also it'll save Shady, give him a little more longevity for having, not getting pounded at the one-yard marks, you know, and so on and so forth. So I think perhaps having two fullbacks fits right into their plan, especially when it was kind of weird when most teams wouldn't even have any fullbacks. I think we maybe ought to give them some credit. Thanks.
Yeah, Manny, I still think they're going to go to the draft and draft one of these guys, but – you know, to have those two guys, have Mike Tolbert, even a Jonathan Williams, if he can prove that he can really be a player, you know, you needed to pick up another draft pick. Maybe they can find a way to pick up one more draft pick, but you only had six. And we kept saying, like, man, how do you make this team better with only six draft picks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you add one more, you know, and now you just got to make the right picks. But, you know, we'll see in the next 5 days if they decide to match it or not, which I don't think they're going to end up matching it, but – if not, well, now you got another draft pick, and you can go ahead and draft somebody else.
Got phone lines open if you have a comment or question. Mike Gillislee signed to an offer sheet by the New England Patriots. Reportedly 2 years, $6.4 million, $4 million up front. Bills have 5 days to match. If they don't match, they get a fifth-round pick from the Patriots in return. That would be Buffalo's third fifth-rounder and their seventh pick overall. You can ring us up, talk about that at 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can think about and discuss our fake news items of the day. Fake news or real news? It is presented by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Are you ready, Donald Jones?
I am ready.
Fake or real? And I guess I want you to think about this a little bit. NFL referees apparently are looking to get out of the business of calling celebration penalties. This is big for you. Celebration penalties are a big issue for you. We've talked about, and it all came about a couple of weeks ago with the Troy Vincent tweet to players. We talked about Troy with it a couple of weeks ago, saying, let's get together, let's discuss celebration and how do we make that better. And now Scott Green, the head of the NFL Referees Association, told SiriusXM NFL Radio, quote, nothing is worse than someone going 80 yards for a touchdown, and then we're trying to figure out, does that warrant a flag for what he's doing in the end zone? We don't really enjoy that. If we could get to a point where it would simply be fines by the league, that would be great. The question of whether it's a foul or not a foul, hopefully we'll get more of a black-and-white situation. NFL referees want to eliminate their role in celebration penalties, fake or real. I think it's real, and I think it's great, and I think that's the way it should go.
I think it's real, too. You know, I think if the league wants to police what these guys are doing on the field, I think the only reason the refs should have to throw a flag is if your celebration goes on for way too long, and they have no choice at that point but to throw a flag to try to get you, you know, get the game back underway. But I think they need to eliminate the refs from really having to call this. The league should just fine these guys, but you need to make the fines a lot higher, because if you have a guy who, you know, and like I said again, if you have a guy who's making Antonio Brown's money, fining him $25,000 when he's scoring touchdowns, you know, he might score 10 touchdowns in a week, I think he'll take that fine every time.
How about if you fine him $100,000?
That might be a little bit different.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe the fine. I get your point about money. I understand that. Maybe that's not enough of a fine.
And yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Can you imagine the squawking if they tried to take $100,000 out of somebody's pocket for gyrating his hips in the end zone? I think that would stop immediately.
Oh, it would definitely stop. You know, you might not. I don't. That right there might eliminate all celebrations, just because as a player, you're like, I don't know what's really going to get me fined. Like, is this going to get me fined? You know, you might push the envelope just a little bit and you get fined, and now it's like, you know what, I'm done celebrating. You know, so that it could work out in that way.
Yeah, I would
so I would think that's
I would I hope that's the way it goes. Here's another real news fake news. Warren Moon is the top undrafted quarterback in NFL history. Warren Moon, top undrafted quarterback in NFL history. I got to say real. Nobody comes to mind. I'd have to think about it hard to come up with somebody who had the career, the impact. He's a Hall of Famer. The kind of impact that Warren Moon had in NFL history. I'm going to say that's real. What do you think?
Yeah, I got to go with real. I mean, the only guy that I guess you could say would come to your mind would be Kurt Warner. Anywhere close, undrafted quarterbacks to really make an impact on this league.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He would be the closest guy that I can think of. Nobody else, not Tony Romo, none of these guys, come nowhere anywhere close to Warren Moon and Kurt Warner. Warren Moon, to me, though, is probably the top just because of the route he had to take just to get to the league, you know, and how long he actually played. I think he – how long was his career? It was something like 20-plus
well, yeah,
years.
Plus you add in the Canadian Football League
right.
stuff.
Right. You know, it's like a 20-plus pro football career. That's amazing, you know. So for a guy to play that long and to make the impact that he has in this game – for me, he has to be the top undrafted QB in the league.
Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. A call here from JB in Ontario. Hello, JB. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Great.
I just wanted to say, I think from watching Gillislee last year, I was really impressed by him. I'd really like to see the team keep him. I really think that in terms of McCoy, and he really didn't get injured last year, but just in case he does, Gillislee is a great option to have and maybe something we can build on in the future.
Well, yeah, he's a great backup. He's a really, I don't know, great, really good backup running back, and the issue comes down to cost. And future, I don't know, Donald, running backs don't last long in this league.
Right.
Gillislee is, what, 25 years old? He's going into his fourth year. He's got some production, you know, some touchdown production, most notably for the Bills, but again, it's a question of how much you want to invest in a backup running back, isn't it? Even if you think he's going to be the future.
Even if you think he's going to be the future, you know, if you invest, I guess, a second-round tender, then next year he's going to want big money, you know. So now you're going to have to pay him next year. And so what do you do then? You know, Mike Gillislee is a backup running back to me. He was going to be the backup running back. Like, he's not even – coming into the season, there is no question that he was even going to be, like, in play to be a starter. You know, I could see you saying, you know, we're going to put a second-round tender on you. You could be a starter on this team. You're going to be the backup right now because we have LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy is making money right now. So we don't want to sink another, what, $2.5 million into this running back position. This is where you are. And if another team comes in and they take you away, well, guess what? We pick up another draft pick, and we'll go out and we'll go ahead and draft a guy that can do exactly what you can do. But you're not going to be a starter on this team.
Hey, we approach the draft. It is a week from this Thursday, round one of the draft, and the Predict the Pick contest presented by M&T Bank continues until a week until tomorrow. All you have to do is predict who the Bills will select with their first round pick. Go to buffalobills.com/predict-the-pick. If you predict the draft pick, the first pick correctly, you get a chance to meet him. Those who predict correctly entered into a drawing to meet that draft pick. Predict the Pick presented by M&T Bank. It is up right now for the next 8 days. On our website, buffalobills.com. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security, home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? Andrew Brandt joined us at 12:30 this afternoon. He is ESPN's NFL business reporter, and he writes an NFL business column for mmqb.si.com. Andrew Brandt talked to us about the structure of these offseason workouts under the new collective bargaining agreement, what teams are able to do with their players. Andrew Brandt talked about the evolution of how these offseason workouts became what they are now.
I was in the NFL for a long time when the offseason was a lot different than it is now. And you mentioned the squawking. It is from the coaches. And I also covered the CBA negotiations several years ago. And listen, coaches weren't part of that negotiation. That was between the players and the owners, and it was all about getting the right deal. And one of the sacrifices the owners made, willingly and happily, I guess, to get the economic deal they wanted, was to give in on the offseason. And, yeah, coaches are upset. But listen, when we talk about big business, which I cover in the NFL, the coaches want for players to be around more in the offseason, that was way down the list.
Andrew Brandt, ESPN NFL business reporter, who joined us earlier today. Earlier this hour, Joel Corey, former agent, now with CBSSports.com, covers business matters for the NFL. We talked with him about the Patriots' offer sheet to Mike Gillislee. They've signed him to an offer sheet. And Joel Corey says it's one of the strategies in dealing with these offer sheets is making them difficult to match, as the Bills did with Charles Clay. Here's what Joel Corey said.
that's what you guys did to get Charles Clay from Miami as a transition guy. You had a balloon payment in the second year so that it wouldn't be matched. And when you had Chris Hogan supposed to make about 1.7 last year, and he was going to make 5.5 in the first year of an offer sheet, yeah, that team's not going to match that. So, yeah, you do that by design because you took away any real poison pills with the offer sheets. So you have to front load them or throw a lot of guaranteed money in there to discourage the team from matching the offer.
Former agent Joe Corey on structuring offer sheets. This discussion came about because of the news just about an hour old that, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL.com, the Patriots have signed running back Mike Gillislee, Bills backup Mike Gillislee, to a two-year deal, $6.4 million over 2 years, $4 million up front. The Bills have 5 days to match. If they elect not to match, the Bills get a fifth-round pick in return. Look, Donald, no one wants to lose good players. Mike Gillislee is a pretty good player, but, you know, this is a game you play, and this is a decision you make, not just whether to tender an offer sheet to somebody, the Bills did with he and Groy, but at what level do you want to tender it and what you would get in return? They do not go into this blindly.
You don't. I mean, you know if you give a guy a lower-round tender – that another team can come in and take him away. I mean, you know that. It's not like you're like, we're going to give him this, but we hope another team doesn't come. Yeah. Like, you know that. You know what's going to happen. You gave him a lower round tender. So teams, you know, if you have a team that has a certain amount of draft picks and they're willing to part ways with that and they don't have to pay that guy that much money, I mean, they'll go ahead and make that offer, you know. So you decided, we'll give you this tender. If another team comes in, we get an extra draft pick, I think you'll live with the extra draft pick.
Especially on a team that starts for picks, as you mentioned.
Right, six picks, you need to get more picks.
We'll see how it plays out, 5 days to match. Hey, we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Ryan Gates, our Entercom board op, production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Glass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, our producer, Jay Harris. Back tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.